Hey guys, just want to let you know the Patreon is up. Check it out, patreon.com/Beer City Media Podcast for all your extra Beer City Media needs. Now on with the show.
Federal agents have taken into custody a man they suspect as the Unabomber. This drama is unfolding outside the tiny town of Lincoln, Montana, and Tom Foreman is there.
Yeah, it is. We're going to be moving people in and out of here. So y'all going to step back. Nobody's going to be in the way when the vehicle comes through. Please just step back.
After 17 years of looking, today FBI agents think they may have finally had a look at the Unabomber. Late this afternoon, Ted Kaczynski was taken from his backwoods cabin, leaving folks in the nearby town of Lincoln stunned.
He was just a real quiet guy. You know, he came to town. He never bothered anybody. He never gave anybody a hard time. He was never in trouble. Never was at the bars. Just a real quiet guy. And, you know, if you had a conversation, it was a real intelligent conversation with him. You know, he's just not the guy that I would think would be the Unabomber.
Locals say Kaczynski has lived here for about 18 years in his cabin down a dirt road. Today, the FBI sealed the area off as they searched his property. Those who have gone to his place say it has no indoor plumbing, no electricity, that he grew his own vegetables, and had scores of books. Gene Udarian went there as a census taker and found a pleasant but reserved man.
Reclusive, hermit type, you know. He didn't go out of his way to make friends or anything like that, you know. He wasn't what you would call a social person.
When he came to town, always alone, Kaczynski, who did not own a car, rode a bicycle. One of his favorite stops, the library. There, people say, he told them he was a Vietnam veteran living on a pension. Former librarian Beverly Coleman says he often wore army green or camouflage clothing and had unusual tastes.
You know, I mean, he didn't read like the normal junk the rest of us read.
Did you have to order in the books?
Oh, yeah. Most generally, you had to order anything in for him because what he wanted was so off the wall. And a lot of stuff he wanted was out of print for years. You know, he's very, very well read man, very educated man.
The other place he was frequently seen, the post office.
I've seen him come out of the post office. I've seen him mail things, you know, just being in there.
Like letters or packages?
No, I don't know. We all go to the post office. Everybody, yeah. Nobody gets their mail delivered to them. So I don't ever remember packages or anything.
At this hour, Kaczynski is believed to be in Helena, where he was taken by the FBI. At last report, in a small windowless office on the third floor of a building that the FBI keeps in this town. Cokie?
Tom, what happens tomorrow in Helena?
It's hard to say what's going to happen. Right now, at last report, he has not been charged with anything. Now, if he is charged, he would be arraigned tomorrow in Helena. But at this moment, the FBI is looking at things. A lot of people here are looking at things and wondering just that very thing. What's going to happen with Ted Kaczynski tomorrow?
Welcome to the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast with Ryan, Larry, Springhill, Josh, and the Illumimami herself, Miss April. And on today's episode, fan vote episode, the king of the wimps, Ted Kaczynski. Unknown.
I was wondering if you're gonna get hung up on that one.
Maybe.
You know it's a bad joke when Larry makes it and immediately just cringes at himself.
Woof.
So
Here was Chris Cornell a mailman?
No, he did hang himself.
So, gathered in the Shoop Kitchen studio, Red Dead 2019 here, the skeptic, the mom, and the beard, getting down on some Unabomber. Fun times. Every week, another fun episode of joy and rapture. We got a lot of bombings this season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This season is
explosive.
Explosive. It is the bomb.
5 stars, says Beer City Media's promo team.
Mm-hmm.
Just so happens to be all 4 of us.
I was going
to
say, do we have a promo team? Did we hire someone on that I'm not aware of? Is it just intern Jenkins?
It is intern Jenkins.
Yeah, he's double duty right now. Which we do have a little preamble. I'll start after we pull that magical vehicle to the side of the road.
Magical?
No.
Well, I've said a million different types. I just
got to sprinkle that with some fairy dust.
I don't have a fairy dust button.
Oh. Well, we'll just pretend.
We'll pull the unicorn to the side of the road and it can just quietly shit into Barack Obama's mouth.
Mm.
Holy crap.
I guess we know.
Well, hello and goodbye, new listeners. Anyway, so yeah, we're going to get real to the corner. Anyway, so basically, if I was to give you the knowledge that I received from going through this episode, mm-hmm. and I was to boil this baby down,
mm-hmm.
and say I got in touch with a filmmaker and somebody who wanted to turn the story of the Unabomber into a movie, I would say the pitch of it would be the story of a brother's rivalry.
Okay.
And I'm just curious.
Stepbrothers too.
Yeah. So I'm curious.
Catalina Wine Mixer too.
Was there ever a time growing up for you where one of your siblings did something that you resented or that you were aggressive about that or upset with them?
Can we should just pick one then.
Yeah.
Just saying, anybody have stories of sibling rivalry growing up? Truth Corner.
I'll start because I don't have any siblings. Oh. I do, however, have a very close cousin who, without going into too much detail, very, very long story short, could shit on a plate and my whole extended family would be like, oh, God, that's just beautiful. How did you accomplish that?
God, you see the corn in that?
Yeah, look, it's the perfect swirl. I could perform open heart surgery in front of... I was so hoping that would not make it to the show. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did, but I don't know. What is that? What did you do?
That's deviled eggs and dessert.
That's not a fart. Is that you shitting? Dude.
How do you think I felt when I received that in my mailbox?
He literally... You
recorded yourself shitting and now... There's going to be like 5,000 people who are going to listen to you shit this week. Well, hello and goodbye, new listeners.
Yeah, right.
Hello, doctors.
Right. Note the little fart at the end, though.
I'm not noting anything.
Okay,
sibling
rivalry.
The worst part is like the amount of pride that he came to me with Sunday morning when he was like, okay, come here. Listen to this. I'm like, fuck, man. That's my husband.
I don't even want to look at you. I'm so disgusted.
I think you married a garbage pail kid.
Yeah, pretty much.
So anyways.
But yeah, that was the whole situation growing up. Mm. I mean, she's only 18 months older than I am. So everything she did either first or better than I did.
Always.
I honestly can't think of a single thing that someone was like, wow, April, great job. That's excellent. Because she always.
Because they weren't Ninja Turtles.
Better. Yeah.
Does she podcast?
I'm
throw
sure
this right in her face.
She could literally go on air and just go, and my family would be like, oh, spectacular.
I bet you could beat her in a triathlon, though.
Anybody else have any stories of family or sibling rivalry?
Oh, God. My brother's only a year and change older than me.
Yeah, I know.
And so we grew up, and that's, we were, my my dad was military, so we moved around a lot. We only had each other. And so a lot of our interests are very closely related. And the big one being, of course, video games.
Nerd!
So, yeah, with gaming, there was always a rivalry.
Didn't he just get a job at Nintendo?
Yeah, my brother actually just got a job at
Congrats. Nintendo. Congrats, Liam.
Yeah, he went up me on this. It's like, I have a job doing reviews. So he's like, well, fuck you. I'm going to get a job at Nintendo. So I know I need to go apply at Sony. So.
Mm. Ooh, that would be interesting.
That would be
okay.
I'd be CEO, bitch. But yeah, it was because we would like the fighting games and stuff that we'd play growing up. You know, there'd be certain games that he'd be better at, certain games I'd be better at. So,
see, our fights involved blood.
Ouch!
You Catholics.
I know, right?
Silly
Catholics.
Yeah, just this one time, I remember I was playing catch with my younger brother, and we were just busting each other's balls. He got to the point, he just started, walked up to me, didn't say a word, and chucked the baseball as hard as he could right into my mouth.
Oh, oh no!
Wow.
Oh, no! Mm-hmm.
Blood just started pouring out of my face.
Good oh, my God.
And he just turned around and walked, and didn't say a word, walked right. It was like... Yeah, it was like a lot of a movie. My poor mother. I know. That's why she's insane.
Jeez.
A poor mother? He's the one bleeding from his mouth.
Okay, but from her mother's perspective, because you know, like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Poor thing.
That's just one of many.
Yeah.
Many.
I won't say that I've ever really, honestly, my brother and I have a really good relationship, because even as a kid, I think the gap was just so big. Like, it's kind of like you and your youngest brother with me and Nick, because he's just that younger than me that I don't necessarily, like, he kind of looked up to me growing up, and that's what got him to play music, and now he's better at playing music than me, but I'm more all about telling people to listen to him than I am getting angry. Now, my sister and I, who were closer in age, we fought all the time. In fact, we would have screaming matches. Like, I would come home and I don't know what it was, but she, I see it now with my two oldest, the way they get catty. And I don't know if I'm just, you know, part catty middle school girl inside, but we would scream at each other. And I will say one thing. I was playing T-ball at the time. So my dad and my mom were like, well, we're paying money. You better get out in the backyard and use the bouncy thing to throw the baseball and catch it and then swing the bat around. So I'm in the backyard and I'm swinging the bat around. And I remember distinctly, I heard my sister yell, but then I was like I don't know what it is about being a brother, especially when your sister's talking to you, but I tuned that shit out. Anyway, I keep swinging the bat. And then all of a sudden I hear, "Tunk!" I turned around. I nailed her in the side of her head.
Oh, no.
She let out the loudest scream I've ever heard to this day. And then she went to the emergency room. She was okay. A little bit of a concussion. I thought I killed my sister.
Oh, my
though.
God. Don't tell mom. Don't tell mom. Don't tell mom. No, just it's fine.
Oh,
it's fine.
No.
Just
Everybody in the neighborhood was out. The second she let out that blood-curdling... 7-year-old girl scream, like everybody's face was popping up over the fence.
Wilson,
like the neighbor stops, turns his lawnmower off. This plane's midair just lands suddenly. This bear's up in a tree with honey in its mouth. Just everybody's looking at me. I didn't have time to be like, get the bandage. Shh. I'm sorry.
Put her head back on.
You can have my TV in the basement. I'll move it up to your room tonight. Mm-hmm. I promise.
A lot of bartering goes on when you.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well,
oh, my God.
Let's get into it. Now, I want to break down a quick little thing about our man, Mr. Theodore John Kaczynski, who was born May 22nd, 1942. Also known as the Unabomber, is a American domestic terrorist, former mathematics professor, and anarchist author. He was a mathematics prodigy, but he abandoned an academic career in 1969 to pursue a primitive lifestyle. Now, before I get into that, I have to give a hearty shout out to our intern Jenkins.
Intern Jenkins.
That's right. He knows how to supply some...
Intern.
Jenkins!
According to an article that Jenkins wrote, which I will give him that credit for, he talks about Raymond Kurzweil. Kurzweil. He is kind of surmising him to Kaczynski, but I'll kind of break this down. So he was an American inventor and futurist. He's involved in fields such as optical character recognition, text-to-speech synthesis, speech recognition technology, and electronic keyboard instruments. He's written books on health, artificial intelligence, transhumanism, the technological singularity. You guys know what singularity is, right?
It's a movie, right?
Well, maybe, but do you know what the basic idea of singularity is?
No.
No one? Mm. It's like technology hitting its zenith.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Like we've
hit the...
You finally hit a wall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or it's just... And it's kind of like... That's when most people speculate that that's when, like, androids take over, and it's like...
Yeah, but who's going to reboot them?
I know. Probably themselves. I don't know. Or maybe bees will make a comeback just at that time. Suddenly bees come back.
Yep.
So they're dying. R.I.P. bees. Kurzweil is a public advocate for the futurist and transhumanist movements and gives public talks to share his optimistic outlook on life extension technologies and the future of nanotechnology, robotics, and biotechnology. So in a nutshell, Kurzweil's belief is the theory of singularity. Kurzweil believes that emerging technologies like nanotechnology and biotechnology will massively increase human intelligence over the next two decades and fundamentally reshape the economy and society, and that eventually our human consciousness will merge with AI, giving human beings immortality. Now, this is kind of a thing, but does anybody here, like, if given the opportunity, would you go for immortality? Or do you think that that would be odd? Because I'll say my perspective real quick.
Does it come without the pain?
I don't know.
You know what I mean?
You're like going to lose everybody. Older, you're going to lose a lot of people, maybe. Maybe if they don't have the
app. If they don't have the app? If they haven't downloaded the immortality app?
Yeah. You know there's always an app.
It's $9.99 a month. I couldn't make it fit in the budget.
It's pretty expensive to retire easily.
To me, death gives life meaning. You get one shot. And you're right. Do it the right
Very
way.
True.
There's no way for you to enjoy the rewards of, say, this month.
All right. Well, let's have hunting once a month.
No, you're
that'll
right.
light a fire under your ass.
Yeah. No, I agree.
What's that move? That television show where they get to commit a crime once a year?
The Purge.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The Purge. There we go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love those movies.
Anybody else want to chime in on that? That was my take.
No, I would have to agree with you. I think. If anything, I don't know if I would go for immortality as much as like knowing or having control over when I was going to die
or how,
you know, I've always been I've been for assisted suicide, you know, human euthanasia, just because I think it's a more dignified way to go than like shit in your pants in a hospice bed.
Understood.
You said euthanasia.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But yeah, as far as immortality
did I not read
goes,
the room?
I feel like
our tone deaf sound guy.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I would want to live long enough to see everyone I love die.
Mm-hmm. That's the hard thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd have to watch.
I'd like to
Highlander.
See some sort of thing that would fix the mistakes I've made the last 20 years.
Don't we all?
Like body enhancement things. Like muscle replacement, knee replacement. Would
yes.
Better than what
liver
we have.
Replacement.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Maybe.
Nanotechnology.
Maybe some eye fixtures.
Yeah.
Larry wants robot eyes.
I do.
Would you shoot lasers?
I'll take Betty Davis eyes at this point. I would.
Robot Eyes sounds like a sweet prog metal band. Mm-hmm.
I love it.
I was thinking more of an album name.
Okay.
I'm thinking X-ray eyes. If I got to choose.
Really? Like see-through clothing?
Not clothing.
Or see-through walls?
All I see are dicks!
Here a dick, there okay. a dick, everywhere a dick, dick.
Maybe not X-ray eyes. I would want like Google eyes. like Google Glass, but
like
just
Google.
But for your eyeballs. Mm-hmm. Like if the, you could insert contacts so that were like Google Glass.
And it tells you like displays like, what that is when you look at
yeah,
it.
Yeah, or translates writing or
I was actually excited for those Google mm-hmm. eyes. I thought because the way they were saying you could look at something, it would tell you what it was.
Yeah.
I think that came out a little early. I think it's going to be like virtual reality in another 10 years. It'll be like how virtual reality is amped up. And like,
I don't think, I think people got spooked out by the recording. That really spooked everybody out. And I get it, man. I don't want, you know, I see people, I don't know if you've ever seen it, women, I'll see in a men's room, dudes like recording.
That's so fucked up.
And they're like recording their friends talking, but I'm like, my dick's in the back. I don't, my dick does not want to make a guest appearance in your shitty YouTube video.
Let's be Larry YouTube. That's so yesterday. This is all about Twitch and Mixer.
I don't even know what those things are. I know what Twitch
is. I think you should see a doctor. They might have an ointment for that.
Well, that kind of plays into a little bit into Kaczynski himself, because he was kind of the opposite of Kurzweil. See, where Kurzweil had the idea of dreaming of nanobots that would enter into his father's and elders, like people to fix diseases, and he also had the idea of actually transferring his father's, downloading his DNA and other biomaterial, and then downloading his father's into his own father into a robot so he can experience his father again, which is kind of crazy to think, like your dad dies and then, but I think that would be like Reanimator. Like that same kind of creepy thing where they're just like brains, or they're just like,
well, yeah, that you could bring back a body, but you can't bring back a soul, or
yeah, which is a whole other episode, I guess we could get into. But anyway, wait, this is he was the man that wrote The Age of Spiritual Machines in 1999, predicted the use of drone warfare. Most media types will be largely purchased digitally and have no physical format associated with it. So
we're getting there
that most consumers computing will move from desktop to small handheld portable computers, which I'm using now, leaving the desktops to be mainly used for the large storage of data, all of which has come true. And that is just the tip of the iceberg.
Or watching porn on a bigger screen.
That's just fun. Single day of 2019. So now this is a quote here. Quote, first, let us postulate that the computer scientists succeed in developing intelligent machines that can do all things better than human beings can do them. In that case, presumably, all work will be done by vast, highly organized systems of machines, and no human effort will be necessary. Either of two cases.
Wally. Might
occur. Yeah.
Well, how do you guys feel about that? Like, let's say in 20 years, it's possible, or even less, 10 years, it's possible that robots and animatronics do all hard labor. How do you feel?
The economy will crumble because the middle class is who spends the money. And if you out them as far as making money, they're not going to have money to spend.
True.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got automated factories right now with with machines that can do the repairs. They have 3D printers. So that you don't even need a maintenance crew. The owner just has to show up once a month to check in on it.
That's insane.
Yeah, I mean,
but labor's the number one cost. So that's why people are pressing for this. They because you know, I mean, $1 billion just doesn't get you where it used to.
Well, let's face it. There's people like, and I know you guys probably are like this as well. But like, I'm gonna use my dad as an example. Mm-hmm. He lives for going to work.
It gives you purpose.
Yeah, like he
I love work.
He loves waking up, going to his job, providing for the family, and knowing that he's working hard to provide for the family, and then coming home and enjoying his weekends. Now, does he love his job? No. But
he loves the act of
work.
Yeah, work gives you purpose. It definitely does.
And that's why I'm like, I honestly, if like say $10 trillion fell on my lap, I don't know what I would do.
I'd work part-time doing what I want.
Right. And there's the difference. I mean, some people have that beautiful occurrence of doing something that they love while also it being their job. Now, for me, there's two things that I really love doing: podcasting mm-hmm. and playing music. Mm-hmm. Playing in music is not going to pay the bills, and no, podcasting is not quite doing that either. But no, it's keeping our brand afloat.
But I have a job that allows me to pursue those things.
Indeed. And that's another side to that. And it's also a job that I enjoy.
Yeah, it's a job I enjoy. It's not a job I love. It's not my purpose. But I
mean, it's also become your identity.
It kind of has. Yeah. And I have no problem with that. I mean, I'm serving the country I love in a small way.
I would say the same thing. Before I got this job as a prostitute, all my jobs, I'm like, my last one, like, oh, I take care of people. That was big.
That was huge.
But like now I can be like, yeah, I'm a prostitute. This mm-hmm. is
for America.
For America. You know, and it's like, I have no shame in that.
No.
Right. Now, I want to say he has kind of a long rant here where he talks about just the different. Is it possible that human control over the machines may be retained? In that case, the average man may have control over certain private machines of his own, such as his car or his personal computer, but control over large systems of machines will be in the hands of tiny elite, just as it is today. Mm. But with two differences. Due to improved techniques, the elite will have greater control over the masses, and because human work will no longer be necessary, the masses will be superfluous. A usual burden on the system. If the elite is ruthless, they may simply decide to exterminate the mass of humanity. If they are humane, they may use propaganda or other psychological or biological techniques to reduce the birth rate until the mass of humanity becomes extinct, leaving the world to the elite.
Someone's got to build that machinery. Someone's got to build the
right
computers.
Or if the elite consists of soft-hearted liberals, they may decide to play the role of good shepherds to the rest of the human race. They will see to it that everyone's physical needs are satisfied, that all children are raised under psychologically hygienic conditions, that everyone has a wholesome hobby to keep him busy, and that anyone who may become dissatisfied undergoes treatment to cure his problem. Of course, life will be so purposeless that people will have to be biologically or psychologically engineered to either remove their need for the power process or make them sublimate. That's a word. Their drive for power.
I'm not going to argue it.
Some harmless hobby. These engineered human beings may be happy in such a society, but they will most certainly not be free. They will have been reduced to the status of domestic animals. Unquote.
It comes down to money. Money will that will not happen because of money.
Now, Mr. Jenkins says, "What does Ray Kurzweil have to do with the Unabomber?" You may now be asking. The previous quote can be found in Kurzweil's book, "The Age of the Spiritual Machines." Mentioned, kind of seemed like he gave more of a shiny side to the liberals on that one, which is fine.
that laugh.
That was that's awkward.
Kurzweil is openly accepting of the arguments against and risk of the technology he so believes in. In this case, he is also linking the motive for the Unabomber attacks directly. Hopefully, Ray Kurzweil is right in his personal assessment that Kaczynski's dystopian prophecy will not come true. So, I don't know. This is interesting to me, and it's all scary. And we covered quite a bit there before going into the Unabomber. But I think that the general idea is that Kaczynski was a fanatic, was a nerd, had a brother and a sister. He grew up in not necessarily the most loving home. It was...
Color me shocked.
I mean, he was born 1942. So he's what, like midst of the World War II. So too young to ever fight.
He's a boomer, like the early age of the boomer, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. He's like, it's kind of a product of that. So in 1971, like I said, he actually did go, he was a professor at Harvard.
Oh, wow.
Teacher.
Wow.
And in fact, as I'll bring up later, some had speculated when they started to figure out who he was and track him down over the 17 years. I'm not saying this was a fast process at all.
No, it involved the post office.
It did involve the none of us, though. Not that we anyway.
We're
so
prostitutes.
So there were some that speculated he could be the Zodiac. And I'll bring that up a little bit more as kind of one of the conspiracies that's related to the Unabomber. You see, sometimes we bring up conspiracies.
I thought we were a comedy show.
No, we're called Therapy now.
Yep.
So anyway, Kaczynski in 71 moved to a remote cabin without electricity or running water near Lincoln, Montana, where he lived as a recluse. Now,
Montana I want to go to.
I do, too. I mean, a big old bison steak.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Some roasted veggies.
The other day, my wife and I shot a cauliflower and had some cauliflower steak.
It looked really good.
Apparently, the shooting was a little overboard, I guess. But isn't that Montana's where Dave Letterman lives right now?
I think so, yes.
Does his fly fish in there.
Now, he lived as a recluse, they say, but he was still on a mail route. Like, there was still getting mail.
I don't think there's a place where you can't get mail.
Well, yeah, I mean,
they're like, if you live in the Grand Canyon, there's a mail route that includes a donkey that you have to ride.
Really?
Down. I'm not joking.
Wow.
So, yep.
Was it like
I need a transfer?
8 miles of tracks that go down
something
to it
like that.
They can't just drop it in. It's like we know this.
Yeah.
So
I have a relative.
Now, people did, as the opening clip kind of said, like people did see him. He would go into town. He'd go to the library, go to the post office. He'd, you know, probably shoot the shit with whoever would listen to him. He smelled like rotten milk from what I heard.
I've heard this sour milk.
Sour milk. I mean, it's the Son of Sam had the same thing.
Well,
it's like any wimpy nerd creep.
He has no running water.
Yeah, he's living out.
I saw your look when you heard no running water. You were like, bleh.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta think. He's no running water and stuff, so it's
no
probably
electricity.
Hard for him to stay clean. So the whole, I don't know, the whole sour milk thing, like.
I get that.
Well, you can go down to the babbling brook and smack his fucking pits, tits, and ass a little bit.
Just
maybe
wash his balls off on the rocks.
I'm just saying, I mean, come on, buddy. If you're ever going to finally get Betty Sue to take you to the local.
I don't think he was looking for romance.
I think
romance
he was
for
really.
Him,
I think he was because he did actually at one point or another go on one date.
Ooh,
and it was a supervisor at a plant,
a post office plant.
They had some, discussion and shared a kiss at the end.
Ooh. Oh my!
He used but Irish Spring that day,
but unfortunately, his advances were unwanted, and he did not get another date. And I think.
Didn't he kneel down and grab her hand and call her m'lady?
No, he did not foul.
Montana's Anthony?
Montana. Well, mathematician, was he like, hey, babe, 1 + 1 = 2.
Dude, it doesn't matter what you say this episode. Everything you say, I hear that fucking diarrhea squirt.
How do you think I felt Sunday morning while I'm eating my breakfast?
I'm still going through.
You're going through the stages of grief like I did.
Yeah.
It's like a breakup. It's bad.
Worse.
To be fair, I even sent it with the tagline, this is so goddamn disgusting, but here you go.
Well, to be fair, just imagine in your mind, stinky Ted Kaczynski shitting in a bucket. There you go. We're in Montana.
Yep.
Oh, Lord.
So anyway.
This bucket presented to you by Home Depot.
That's right.
Call it low.
He witnessed the destruction of the wilderness surrounding his cabin. So he was relatively recluse in 71, and then he started to see people coming in and like, let's put in a soccer field with a mini mall on top and maybe an IHOP.
And is there a Starbucks here yet?
That's one-stop shopping, if you ask me.
Put a Starbucks in there. And then in the parking lot, we'll put another Starbucks.
And then a church.
Welcome to Granville.
That's honestly one of my fondest memories from when I went to New York City is standing on a corner at a Starbucks and literally looking down the street no more than a quarter of a mile and seeing another Starbucks.
I was in San Francisco when we were in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Kitty corner, another Starbucks.
Yep.
Here in Standale, which is like a suburb of Grand Rapids. It's whatever. Anyways, there was a Starbucks in the Myers, and in the Myers parking lot was another fucking Starbucks for a while. There was a Starbucks in the parking lot of a Starbucks.
Well, insane. When you're done drinking your Myers Starbucks, you might want a Starbucks to take home.
Yeah, if you're like my wife that drinks it while you're walking around inside.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then you leave and you're like, well, now I need a road beverage.
A road coffee.
Yep.
It's my Ouch. Lifeblood.
Send those e-gift cards.
Yes, send all your Starbucks e-gift cards to care of ashoop88@gmail.com.
Bam.
Sweet. So now, as he wanted to go out to Montana, imagine, I mean, I guess you have to kind of imagine you're this math nerd guy who, by the way, all the kids that had him as a teacher were like, this guy sucks. Like, they'd ask questions and he'd just be like, almost like he's like not paying attention. And he's also probably thinking, fucking idiot. Doesn't ask the right questions. I'm Stinky Ted and I know what's right. And he's just drawing like weird.
Stinky Ted.
I'm just saying, you know, and then so.
He's just at the chalkboard writing out pi to like the thousand.
As far as it'll go.
He's like half speaking, half burping up milk on his chest.
Did you know that somewhere in the middle of pi, 69 and 420 are right next to each other?
Oh my God.
It's true.
That's right. Beautiful. That's the moment where Skylar takes a big old hit off of her bong.
That's right.
Oh, and we love pi here too. Yes. So anyway, so you know, you put yourself in his shoes. He's a stinky, no friend having, dateless nerd who, by the way, was sending, was like I said, kind of building up this tension throughout his whole life because he had an okay family life, but it wasn't ideal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're that type of like, we're going to say Asperger's-y, you're antisocial and the things that you really get into become your life. Mm-hmm. AKA somebody who has like video game syndrome or whatever, or can only focus on that one thing. And that's what, that's all they talk about. So
why are you guys looking at me?
You realize, okay, that's it. Fuck this. I don't like, I'm afraid of the future. I hate technology. I'm going to go to Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden these real estate people start showing up.
They're putting technology in your backyard.
And that's what happened is he saw that. He witnessed the destruction of the wilderness surrounding his. He had a favorite spot.
Oh.
So maybe it was like his favorite masturbation spot. Because you know he wasn't getting ass. Just him and like five turtles standing in a row just jerking their chain.
Just coming on turtles.
He's
Michelangelo's like, no, dude. right on the pizza, man.
Master Spritzer, find your turtles. Out masturbating with Sticky Ted. You get back in dojo. I teach you moves, you stupid. Oh, God. Fucking welfare queen turtles.
Splinter's a bit of a racist.
Oh, my God.
Splinter's the racist here. Okay. Yeah.
That's right. So anyway, Ted's out there flogging his bishop or goes out for his morning
flogging
spank.
The turtle.
He's going out for his morning spank. And they he realizes the real estate developer
wake and spank
taking his spot away.
Literally standing in front of him. He's jerking. He opens up, opens his eyes, and there's the guy standing there.
There's a construction worker.
Bro, I don't get
the hard hat.
Shit.
He's just a construction worker named Kyle, just drinking his Monster Energy drink. He's like, I saw a bunch of spots next to where those dead turtles were, you weirdo. He's like,
Sticky Ted will have his revenge.
And he runs away. Anyway.
His penis hitting the sides of his legs.
Mm-hmm.
That's my mini last podcast on the left reference there. Stinky Ted, or not, he will have his revenge. Because he did have that tendency to in it, especially in his manifesto, to be like, it's so dry. And we'll get more to the manifesto as we go. He needed some lube. He had no electricity, no running water, just spit and fucking maple syrup. So anyway,
I'll take the spit.
I listened to an interview with him too, by the way, and I was just like, yeah, I hear the Asperger's.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the only interviews he had was in 99, and there's a documentary out about it on YouTube if you want to look it up. And the interviewer is talking to him, and it's all about his brother, which we'll get to. So they took his shit. They took his favorite spot. Mm-hmm. So he said, fuck this. I'm going to blow bitches up, which he started to do in 1978. Now, in 1995, he sent a letter to the New York Times and promised to desist from terrorism if the Times or the Washington Post published his essay, Industrial Society and Its Future.
Isn't that the newest Ministry album?
It does kind of have that ring to it.
Industrial Society and Its Future.
In which he argued that his bombings were extreme but necessary to attract attention to the erosion of human freedom and dignity by modern technologies that require large-scale organization.
Who's ready for a Facebook selfie? Ted is.
By the way, guess what publication, because at first they were like, no one's going to publish that. Guess what publication was the first one to say, we'll publish it?
National Enquirer.
Penthouse.
Nice. No one would have read it.
Of course.
And we got that. We got them three big beavers, right? The big spread. And then we got the article about the girl who talks about how to deep throat the most guys in a glory hole.
In his honor, they did an article, or they did another one, turtles.
Yeah, and then we got Fistum Frankie talking about The Rock, the movie The Rock that just came out because it's 95. And then we'll put the Unabomber shit.
So anyway, Kaczynski was the subject of the longest and most extensive investigation in the history of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And by the way, join our Instagram group. We'll show you that famous sketch that they had. That was the one sketch that they had.
Looks like Hella Greg.
It does. Shout out to the Serial Chillers podcast. Love you, buddy. The FBI Attorney General Janet Reno published for the publication of Industrial Society and Its Future, which led to a tip-off from Kaczynski's brother, David. And that's where the rivalry kind of loops back around. But that's my second preamble. Like I said, this is a long episode. After his arrest in 96, by the way, his brother recognized his writing style. That's what it was.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was also his wife.
His brother's wife, yeah. Which is part of in that documentary that I know that's probably where you heard that. But he mentioned too, it was David, because he was like, it was a term of phrase, which I'll bring up later when we get to it. Mm. And it was something that he was like, my brother says that wrong, and it's totally written like that in them. So after his arrest in 96, Kaczynski tried unsuccessfully to dismiss his court-appointed lawyers because they wanted him to plead insanity in order to avoid the death penalty. He did not want the death penalty, by the way. Or he did want the death penalty. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. As he did not believe that he was insane, which, I mean, to his credit, he did know right from wrong.
Yeah.
So he is right in that. But, and it's very similar to like when we covered the Oklahoma City bombing. They both were so, McVeigh and Kaczynski both definitely have this nature, again, from when they're talking, where you can see their perspective shines through. It's almost like the deeply religious sometimes when they speak, and you're like, it's like listening to Tom Cruise. You're like, he seems like he's on the right path. And then he starts talking about Xenu and Scientology, and you're like, wait a minute, Tom Cruise is fucking nuts.
Feature episode.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to talk about his early life for a little bit so you can go back in time a little bit and get an idea. Now, before the Zodiac and before all the Zodiac conspiracies and all the thing, before he taught at Harvard, he was born in Chicago, Illinois, to a working class, second generation Polish family. Kaczynski.
Can relate.
I bet they like bratwurst hunks.
AKA kielbasa.
Wanda, Teresa, and Theodore Richard Kaczynski, a sausage maker.
Dang. I
mean, his parents told his younger brother, David.
Wouldn't that be awesome if your dad was a sausage maker?
I would kind of love that.
Well, he had two sons.
And so he would bring home sausage.
Yeah. And it'd be delicious.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, you're a sausage maker, too.
Now, Yeah, no, I can't even. I bet they would get sick of it,
Chicago.
Though.
Yeah.
That's the only part that would suck. You'd get sick of that food.
My guts, Dad. My guts. I know. You're going to eat these sausages and you're going to like it.
Here, now wash it down with natural cheese.
All we got left is pickle juice.
She's like the Midwest version of Bubba Gump Shrimp Company. Sausage, pizza, sausage. Sandwiches,
sausage
grits,
sausage stir fry,
sausage croissants, sausage rum,
sausage in a sausage,
sausage peanut butter and jelly,
burnt sausage, cold sausage,
sausage
gravy coffee. Sausage,
tied the sausage. Wait, that's where you boys came from.
Cold sausage, with warm sausage.
Oh, you boys look parched. How about some sausage water?
Yeah.
Wash it down with some sausage chips.
Mmm, sausage shakes.
Mmm.
A sausage split.
Sausage smoothie.
Average life expectancy of this family?
12.
32.
Little Bobby's going in for a stent.
At the age of two. It's his first stint.
Celebrate it.
You're 12 years old.
Three stints
IV.
And you reach you've reached manhood.
Yeah, it's your punch card.
It's the Polish family bar mitzvah.
I'm going to turn this Winnebago around, all right? If this ain't a quadruple bypass, we ain't got nowhere to go. You got one open hole right now.
So anyway.
Oh, my God.
Now, his parents told his younger brother, David, that Ted had been a happy baby until severe hives forced him into hospital isolation, which limited contact with others. So I would say that would probably be a beginning.
Anything that happens to you as a kid will fuck you up.
It is. I think it's like ages 1 to 6. Because I've heard people say the 1 to 3 thing, but I don't think it's just 1 to 3. I think it's more like 1 to 6, 7, somewhere in there.
Especially like around the age of like 5.
Yeah.
And you're starting to be more cognitive of what's going on.
I see it with my youngest right now.
Even like health wise, I had pneumonia when I was like 18 months, and I've had constant upper respiratory problems ever since then. Like just all the time. Like how often am I just hacking up lung butter? Because that just my body is for whatever reason that made me super susceptible to upper respiratory.
I had bronchitis from every year from like the age of 6 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
But I haven't had it. I've only had it once since I was been an adult. So I've been pretty lucky on that front.
Yeah, ain't nobody got time for
that. I got pneumonia once in high school.
Mm-hmm. It's
so
sucks.
Bad. Yeah. During football season, I went from 205 pounds to 165 pounds. Mm-hmm.
Best weight loss ever.
Yeah, it was all muscle, though. It was all the muscle I built up for football. I lost it all.
I had botulism when I was like 19.
Botulism? How did
you get lumbargo, too?
It was food poisoning,
tuberculosis?
Right?
Tuberculosis?
Yeah.
But it was super intense. Yeah,
yeah, like botulism is the kind that can like paralyze you.
911, yeah. I was in an emergency vehicle. Yeah, no, I was like seizuring.
Where did it come from?
I think Taco Bell. I shit my brains out.
I went to Taco Bell and all they gave me was this botulism. Oh, God.
I think I got pink eye from that clip.
Do you get pink ear from it? Is that a thing?
Yep.
I hope you swiped right and left after that.
Yeah, with the toilet paper. Yeah.
Now, parents told his brother, David, as I said, that Ted had been a happy baby but had hives and was in hospital for a long time, after which he showed little emotion for months. Wanda recalled Ted recoiling from a picture of himself as an infant being held down by physicians examining his hives. She said,
who shows a kid that?
I don't know. It was like, remember this fun time?
Remember this traumatic experience in your life? Here you go.
He took a picture.
Sticky Ted doesn't like that.
Runs away.
I'm going to go make pie. But the number.
Hey, JFK, check out this video.
Jeez.
Zoinks.
It's mind-blowing.
She said he showed sympathy to animals who were in cages or otherwise helpless.
He's a good guy now.
I know.
All right, let him out.
Hitler rescued cats.
Let's dig him back up, maybe turn him into a statue.
Oddly enough, only the white cats with the black little stash.
Actually, Hitler was a vegan because he loved animals so much. True fact.
He was a vegan?
Yeah.
Wow.
Or vegetarian. But whatever the it was because he
Hitler
loved animals.
Hitler was a vegetarian.
Mary Sue, Mary Lou, Mary Boo.
Adolf Hitler, Adolf Hitler. No, that doesn't work.
Killed the Jews, killed the Jews, killed the Jews.
90s hits with Nazi lyrics.
So anyway. This is our neighbor. This is our neighbor Amy's new cat. It has a Hitler stash.
Oh yeah.
They named her Ruby, but I was like, dude, that's a missed opportunity. You should have named it Hitler. Yeah.
Or Heinrich.
Michael Jordan tried to bring it back.
Oh, I remember that.
Didn't work.
Anyway, so he liked animals, which she speculated stemmed from his experience in hospital isolation. From first to fourth grade, Kaczynski attended Sherman Elementary School in Chicago, where administrators described him as healthy and well-adjusted. In 1952, 3 years after David was born, the family moved to southwest suburban Evergreen Park, Illinois. Ted transferred to Evergreen Park Central Junior High School after testing. He scored an IQ of 167.
Damn.
Holy shit.
So he's smart as fuck.
That is actually the scientific term they use for that range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Smart as fuck.
Yeah, like you have average IQ above.
You have dull. Average. You have literally like idiot. Yeah. I think it's like.
Ignoramus.
Ignorant.
Can we all do an IQ test? Can we make that an episode of another show where we all get IQ
tests? They're pretty
done?
We could. They're pretty intense. They're 2 hours and you have to go to like a
Oh damn. I thought we could just swipe on something.
Oh no, it's not those IQ tests on the
God, you BuzzFeed.
You mean we can't do like a Mario Kart racing version of IQ?
For a ride, we give them a picture now. Color between the lines. Ooh, zoinks.
Show up on time.
I was on time today.
You were. Blind squirrel.
He skipped the sixth grade because of his high IQ. Later described this as a pivotal event. Previously he had socialized with his peers and was even a leader, but after skipping ahead, he felt he did not fit in with the older children and was bullied.
Oddly enough, loved the show Doogie Howser.
Interesting reference.
Now, just as a short interjection, not to be like, but I had the opportunity to skip two grades too.
Really?
And my mom actually held me back for that exact reason. She didn't want me to feel uncomfortable with
I think it would.
Older, yeah. Older than me.
Well, if we can't do an IQ test, I guess we can base the I was held back a grade growing up. So
did we all take ACT? ACT, SAT?
Yes.
Yes.
What's our round the horn? Do you remember ACT scores?
I remember SAT, I think.
I know my... Was ACT... What was your ACT?
The first time or the second time I took it?
I guess the better one?
Yeah.
The higher one, I guess.
The first time I took it, I was only in sixth grade. I took ACT in sixth grade, and I got a 27. When I took it, I think it was my junior year, I got a 34. I forget what it was like.
April should
two
be
numbers.
The host of this show.
It was two numbers under whatever the top number is.
I didn't take it because I'm a dumb dumb and I record my farts. I'm like basically Patrick Starr.
That's okay. I love you anyway.
Larry, do you remember yours?
ACT? I want to say a 30.
Mm-hmm.
I know it wasn't in the 20s, so I'm going to just err on the side and say 30.
Mm-hmm.
25.
That's still really good.
Yeah.
Because average is like 18 or 19. Mm-hmm. That's still way above
You're
average.
Above average.
Mm-hmm.
We're all look how smart we are, guys. Except fuck. Me. No, you're
no,
smart.
No, I
too.
Seriously thought I would. Because I had to look up what the.
Sure, they give you 20 just for writing your name, but. Fucking with you.
What is the highest you can get on ACT? Is it 36?
No, I think it's actually
40 or something. Yeah. We're so dumb we're looking at that.
Well, geez, we're how many years?
What's the highest score you can get on an ACT test?
I found this on the web.
Thanks.
According to the web.
I'm pretty sure 36.
36 is the perfect score. Mm-hmm. You got a 34?
Mm-hmm. That was my
damn.
Junior year.
Send her coffee.
No so, kidding.
Both Ted and David were intelligent, but Ted stood out in particular.
We have the smartest podcaster in the world on our podcast.
Aww.
I mean, combined, thanks. If we combine our ACT scores and divide it by four, I'm pretty sure we're the smartest podcast probably ever.
Eat it.
With like shit it. Sounds. With-
hey, no one's above shit sounds.
No.
So anyway.
It's true.
So both Ted and David were intelligent, but Ted stood out in particular. One neighbor said she had never known anyone who had a brain like he did. While another said that Ted was strictly a loner who didn't play an old man before his time. His mother recalled Ted as a shy child who would become unresponsive if pressured into a social situation. At one point, she was so worried about Ted's social development that she considered entering him into a study for autistic children.
I've always wondered what you guys are parents. Mm-hmm. If your kid isn't socially, what do you do? It's so important.
If a kid is struggling socially,
yeah,
I mean that's like, literally the life that we're living like, right now.
It seems like forcing is the bad way to go, but not doing anything.
There's a distinct balance of like putting your child into situations where they are outside their comfort zone, but not so far out that they withdraw.
Mm-hmm. And you give them a way of backing off. Mm-hmm. Like for example, we've had kids over to play this past summer. And we told Garrett, like, hey, man, you can go out. We want you to go outside and be with these kids because you've played with them before and you're friends with them. But if it starts to get a little too intense.
If you feel overstimulated, you can take like a 5-minute break inside. Mm. And that's just enough. I said, just sit at the kitchen table, mm-hmm. get a drink of water, calm, like get yourself together and then come back outside.
I was very socially awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And the job I have now is like the perfect way mm-hmm. to get me through that.
Yeah.
Now in high school, wait, was that a bad transition?
No.
Yes.
Fine.
I thought it was fine.
Well, the smart one says it's fine.
She judged the judge.
Yep.
I'm just, there's so much to get through. I'm sorry. Kaczynski attended Evergreen Park Community High School where he excelled academically. Throughout high school, Kaczynski was ahead of his classmates academically. Placed in a more advanced mathematics class, he soon mastered the material. He skipped the 11th grade, and by attending summer school, he graduated at age 15.
Wow.
Couldn't even drive a car, but had graduated. Jeez.
He was one of his school's 5 national merit finalists and was encouraged to apply to Harvard. He entered Harvard on a scholarship in 1958 at the age of 16. A classmate later said that Kaczynski was emotionally unprepared.
Yeah.
Quote,
You think?
They packed him up and sent him to Harvard before he was ready. He didn't even have a driver's license.
Hey, Stinky Ted, we're playing some beer pong over here.
I can't drink.
I like mathematics.
Like that stops anybody ever when they go to college.
True.
I know, that's a great point. There should be more comedies or silly shit like that where the super smart kid goes to college and then just gets fucking wasted. That's kind of a short scene.
I only know of one person who didn't drink through college.
You don't even know one?
Mm-hmm. Andy.
Your brother, Andy.
He's straight edge.
Oh, okay.
Never had a drink in his entire life. No.
I admire people who do that. I think it takes an interesting mindset.
I'm cautious of them. No, I'm kidding.
I mean, my brother is too. He's never smoked, done drugs, drank, nothing.
I'm jealous. Like, he's like, don't you miss it? Miss what? I don't know what it is.
Right.
We always say I made up for him.
Yeah, no kidding.
In a short span of time.
Isn't your younger brother also making it up for him?
He's no. Yes.
Yeah, very much so.
He's over the past couple of years, but me, it's been ever since a long time.
It's all right. During his first year at Harvard, Kaczynski lived at 8 Prescott Street, which was designed to accommodate the youngest, most precocious freshman in a small, intimate living space.
Ooh.
Which just sounds like fucking...
Sounds like a realtor wrote that for you.
Wedgies and fucking...
Mm-hmm. In college?
And like...
Hazing, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, I'm sure they were. I'm saying like this group, like this is just a bunch of kids that when they walked outside, they were getting wedgies.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, that's like Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, yeah, kind of that. So that's a perfect example. Yeah.
Except less rape.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
For right? the next 3 years, he lived at Elliott House. One of his suite mates there recalled that he avoided contact with others and would just rush through the suite, go into his room and slam the door. Another said Kaczynski was reserved, but regarded him as a genius. It's just not opinion, but Ted was brilliant. Other students stated Kaczynski was less socially averse And these descriptions imply an Elliott House resident who dined with Kaczynski at times called him very quiet but personable.
Hmm.
He would enter into the discussions maybe a little less so than most, but he was certainly a friendly person. As a sophomore, Kaczynski participated in a study described by author Alston Chase as a purposely brutalizing psychological experiment. Led by Harvard psychologist Henry Murray, subjects were told they would be debating personal philosophy with a fellow student and then were asked to write essays detailing their personal beliefs and aspirations. The essays were turned over to an anonymous attorney who in the later session would confront and belittle the subject, making vehement, sweeping, and personal abusive attacks. So the
Jesus,
what the psychological fuck? Study
this is the 60s.
It's called debating.
So while electrodes monitored the subject's psychological reactions, that was also happening at the same time. These encounters were filmed and subjects' expressions of anger and rage were later played back to them repeatedly. So this is the government doing this to Harvard students.
So
the experiment lasted 3 years with someone verbally abusing and humiliating Kaczynski. And the prime, this is when your frontal cortex is still forming. He's in college. He's off to study and he's thinking he's, you know, chasing his mathematics dream. And now all of a sudden, yeah, he's a kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's a kid. You're a kid till you're 25 in my mind.
This is reminding me so much of the Michigan bombing. How it's almost, it almost makes you wonder if he is a product of bad mental health, you know, from everything else, but then also all of this.
Yeah, that's why.
This may have probably done more damage than anything.
Right.
Yeah, it's certainly one of the what came first, the chicken or the egg situations. Did he have poor mental health because of the situations that he found himself in? Or,
well, think about the doctors probing him when he had the hives, the picture he reeled away from because he hated to be degraded even at that young age, growing up and then never getting a girlfriend, being socially awkward, jumping so far ahead that he's 16 in college.
Mm-hmm. And being humiliated. I think humiliation does a ton of damage to a human being.
Mm-hmm. Kaczynski spent 200 hours as part of the study.
Dude. Okay, I think we found our problem.
Yeah, right?
Kaczynski's lawyers later attributed his hostility towards mind control techniques to his participation in Murray's study. Some sources have suggested, and here we go, that Murray's experiments, past episode, were part of Project MK Ultra.
Oh. No shit.
Oh.
The CIA research into mind control, Chase and others have also suggested that this experience may have motivated Kaczynski's criminal activities.
CIA, what did you do?
Great.
Now, his career is a assistant professor at UC Berkeley. Now, I'm sorry, I said Harvard. That's where he taught was Berkeley, which would have put him in the Zodiac because that's California.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
In 1962, the year my mom was born, Kaczynski enrolled in the University of Michigan.
Hmm.
Where he earned his master's and doctoral degrees in mathematics in 1964 and 67, respectively. Michigan was not his first choice for postgraduate education. He had also applied to University of California, Berkeley, and the University of Chicago, both of which accepted him, but offered him no teaching position or financial aid. Michigan offered him an annual grant of $2,300.
And would you pay for one class nowadays?
Yeah, right. Yeah. That pays for your books.
Yeah, right.
That's pushing it.
And parking.
At the University of Michigan, Kaczynski specialized in complex analysis, specifically geometric function theory. His intellect and drive impressed his professors. He was an unusual person, quote, was not like the other graduate students. He was much more focused about his work. He had a drive to discover mathematical truth, said Professor Peter Duren. Quote, it is not enough to say he was smart, said George Peranian, another of his Michigan mathematics professors. At Michigan, Kaczynski earned 5 B's and 12 A's in his 18 courses. However, in 2006, he said his memories of the University of Michigan are not pleasant. The fact that I not only passed my courses except one physics course, but got quite a few A's shows how wretchedly low the standards were at Michigan.
Hmm.
In 1967, Kaczynski's dissertation, Boundary Functions, won the Summer B. Myers Prize for Michigan's Best Mathematics Dissertation of the Year. Alan Shields, his doctoral advisor, called it the best I have ever directed. And Maxwell Reed, a member of the dissertation community, said, I would guess that maybe 10 to 12 men in the country understood or could appreciate it.
Wow.
Wow.
So that's where he's at. Kaczynski published two journal articles related to his dissertation in 3 months after leaving Michigan. In late 1967, the 25-year-old Kaczynski became the young assistant professor of mathematics in the history at University of California, Berkeley, where he taught undergraduate courses in geometry and calculus. His teaching evaluation suggests that he was not well-liked by his students. He seemed uncomfortable teaching, taught straight from the textbook, and refused to answer questions, as I mentioned before.
Well, let's be honest. He's like 25. How many of his students are probably older than him?
Right.
Or only a year or two younger.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I guess if I were to put myself back in, you know, at that age, I would be looking at this guy and be like, how are you in this position? How do you have this job? Or, and you know, older people, they're gonna look down on him and be like, especially the time this was all happening, they're like, oh, he's just some kid. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Right.
Without any explanation, Kaczynski resigned on June 30th, 1969. At the time, the chairman of the mathematics department, J.W. Addison, called this a sudden and unexpected resignation. Now, let's get to Montana a bit here. After resigning from Berkeley, Kaczynski moved to his parents' home in Lombard, Illinois, and then two years later, in 1971, to a remote cabin he had built outside Lincoln, Montana, where he could live a simple life with little money and without electricity or running water. Now, he was one of these children that receive, what is that called when you get like a check every month from your parents? Trust fund kid.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. He was a trust fund kid.
My brother. Oh.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
So, I guess I'm not saying that these types of people rank very high on my list, but if you're a trust fund kid and you're also own your own business and a family and you're doing all these things, then I can understand. And I think your parents give you money. I guess that's cool.
Hey, it's their money. You can do what they want with it.
Exactly. And if they're investing in you, investing in their, you know, future generation, I get that too.
You can become president.
But when you move out there to shit in a bucket and talk to squirrels, plug the bishop with turtles, and then yell about the government all the time. Look, I get where he's coming from, given that we've gone through his life up until he now has gone, you know, woodsman.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what his beard looked like.
Oh, God. It's not nice.
I'm only picturing, like, the Peter Griffin with, like, birds nesting in it.
Well, there's that, but he's also real skinny. Because, I mean, you're not eating a lot when you're out there cooking carrots and turnips, whatever bullshit you can find. You're like, acorn stew. Hey, Mr. Turtle, want to share this soup with me?
Oh, crab apple soup again.
Sure do love animals. Animals don't talk shit.
Hey, I believe it was the 1964 or 5 edition of The Joy of Cooking that has how to skin and cook a squirrel.
Wow.
Squirrel quesadillas.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds nutty.
Squirrel quesadillas.
Squirrel gumbo.
Squirrel fruit by the foot.
Squirrel fruit roll up.
Hey, Janie, you pick me up some squirrel IPA.
Squirrel on a stick.
Squirrel popsicles.
Squirrel pot pie.
Squirrel taco.
Squirrel go-gurt.
Squirrel cereal.
Squirrel burrito.
Squirrel. Just keeps
squirrel a whirl. That's when you put the squirrel
Didn't
in the
Didn't we
blender.
Talk about squirrels last week?
Squirrel
as the Beatles. Where I listened like 3 times. Like, where'd that come from? I'm still confused.
Yeah. Okay. I remember that now.
Squirrel on the run.
Oh, you got me with that one. Now his original goal is to become self-sufficient, but then people decided to build a bunch of shit, and he got mad and decided. Go crazy. But in the meantime, while he's getting and ramping there, he used an old bicycle to get to town and volunteer at the local library. He said which he frequently visited to read classic works in their original languages. Oh, fancy boy.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Potter. All right. Again, we know who the guy that didn't take the ACT is.
Yeah, he's the one who records his shits.
What are you trying to say? You trying to tell me The Haunted Mask 2 by R.L. Stine is not the finest literary work.
You leave Mr. Stein out of this.
All right, sorry.
Oh.
Kaczynski decided it was impossible to live peacefully in nature because of the destruction of the wildland around his cabin by real estate development and industrial projects. In response, he began started making his own porn.
Mm. Oh, God.
Squirrel flashlight.
What do you think porn was before
Squirrel Devil
videos?
Sign. Hmm? It's a flippy book.
Shadow.
Oh, man. You see that guy over there? He's got, I caught him looking at his flippy book. He's into paws. He's into squirrel porn.
You can pause precisely.
Hey, can you pause that flippy book? I'm almost done.
Is that a bookmark in there? Yeah, I only got to that part of the movie. I'm only like 42 pages in.
Pause in a porn.
What if it's that one thing that the whirly do with that you hand cranky and that's the horse that runs?
And you're trying to pull your dick.
Yeah, just you're trying to crank. It's like rubbing your belly and tapping your head at the same time.
Ah, she's showing so much ankle in this one. Oh, God. I can almost make out her knee under that dress.
Oh, how awful would it be, though? Like, you accidentally mentally switch it so you punch yourself in the balls.
That would be someone with an ACT of 25 would probably do, yeah.
Don't worry. I've punched myself in the balls many times in this life. Anyway. So, in an interview after his arrest, he recalled being shocked on a hike to one of his favorite spots, as I mentioned, his masturbation site. Mm-hmm. He said that you'd find these ravines that cut very steeply into a cliff-like drop-offs, and there was even a waterfall there. It was about a 2 days hike from my cabin that was the best spot until the summer of 83. That summer, there were too many people around my cabin, so I decided I needed some peace. I went back to the plateau, and when I got there, I found they had put a road.
Oof.
Can you imagine that?
The veins of industry coming into Stinky Ted's cabin! Squirrels! Turtles!
Unite!
Unite!
It's a Disney film all of a sudden.
God damn it, Turtles! You're not run with Stinky Ted! I tell you, go back to Dojo! Michelangelo, drop that! Strip her from the trail!
Turtles, these are the Teenage Mutant Ninja Squirrels. Okay. They don't eat pizza, they eat peanut butter jelly sandwiches.
All I'm envisioning is Stinky Ted riding on the back of a turtle as a wave of squirrels crests onto the newly formed road.
There's four squirrels. Steve, Sam,
Alvin and Theodore.
Well, those are chipmunks, but they're grandfathered in.
Mm-hmm. I just feel like there's going to be a squirrel that's going to write an angrier letter. I heard it. I can't do the voice. I think we're racist.
You have sullied the name of squirrel on your supposed conspiracy show. I no longer call it therapy. I will call it conspiracy. Signed, one pissed off squirrel.
We're sorry to all our squirrel listeners. So let's talk. Actually, you know, we're due a break. Let's do a break and then we'll get into we'll get into the bombings, and we've got a hell of a mail sack. We'll see you on the other side.
How did you, David, come to suspect that your brother was the Unabomber?
You know, it actually began with my wife, Linda. And interestingly enough, she had never met Ted. But she knew that Ted had this kind of phobia about technology. She knew he was estranged from the family. Mm-hmm. But I had never seen Ted violent. I couldn't believe that he was capable of it. But she did, at that point, say, look, the Unabomber has sent this manifesto to the Washington Post. Would you read it and tell me what you think? And I thought it would be a way to allay Linda's fears. I thought I'd read that thing. I'd tell her it's not Ted. And instead, as I began to read it, I realized that the voice there was so much like Ted's.
Some languaging?
Yeah, there was a particular phrase where he had called modern philosophers cool-headed logicians. Mm-hmm. And I had recalled a similar phrase in a letter he had once sent me.
And then you thought?
And the day finally came when I said to Linda, you know, hon, I think it's a 50-50 chance.
That it could be.
Yeah.
And did you ever think of not turning him in?
Oh, think of the dilemma I faced. Mm-hmm. You know, on one hand, here's my brother whom I love, who I felt
whom
the
your
need
mother
to,
had told you to always protect.
To protect. I remember when I was a child, she had said, never abandon your brother because that's what he fears the most. I think Mom knew that Ted had a kind of vulnerability about him. He was going to struggle in life.
Mm-hmm. How did you tell your mother? So how did you do it? You have this dread and you have this denial and you don't want to face it, but then something inside you knows that it could be true, 50-50, as you said. So then you determined to go to the FBI.
If you think of the dilemma, we were in a place where any decision we made could lead to somebody's death.
Right.
If we did nothing, we might wake up someday and realize, hey, somebody died because we had failed to act. In that case, we'd have the blood of innocent people on our hands. On the other hand, there was the realization that if I turned Ted in, you know, he'd committed 3 murders. He was the most wanted person in America. He could be executed. So I had to ask myself, what would it be like to go through the rest of my life with my brother's blood on my hands? I think ultimately we just felt, you know, we couldn't live with ourselves if we failed to stop the violence. Mm-hmm. We had to act. And so we did end up, through an attorney, contacting the FBI. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one.
Second segment. Time to talk more about the Unabomber and his bombs. From 78 to 95, Kaczynski mailed or hand-delivered a series of increasingly sophisticated bombs that cumulatively killed 3 people and injured 23 others. A lot of these bombs were that way. Like somebody would come up and be like, hey, what's this? Blast their fingers off. Fuck my life. In a few cases, somebody went, I better not be a bomb, which is like, don't just, refrain.
That's still, I mean, they're like, okay, they didn't die, but that's life-altering losing mm-hmm. fingers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, or getting like your eyeballs mm-hmm. blasted out the back of your head, sort of. I guess you'd be dead, but.
Then you'd get robot eyes.
Yeah, with lasers.
See? Everything's all right.
You'd be the star of any like you go to see Trans-Siberian Orchestra. I'd be like, I have extra.
But not pain. Lasers that can. Yeah, exactly. Not lasers that can really do anything. It's just lasers your cat would chase.
I was going to say, work in a cattery and you just be everyone's best friend.
Now, while the bombing devices varied wildly through the years, all but the first few contained the initials FC, which Kaczynski later said stood for Freedom Club. Just like, was that him and the turtles and the squirrels? Shaved FC onto the back of the squirrel's head.
Yep.
Freedom Club. Unite.
The bison that he rode. Mm-hmm. Had it.
Would you guys ride a bison? That'd be fun.
I think it'd be a little rough on your genitalia and your anus and your taint, but
so
I guess
a turtle.
I just feel like if you're riding a bison, you're listening to Bruce Springsteen for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the appropriate music.
Yeah.
Just there's Born in the 4th of July playing in the background.
Born on the 4th of July was not the name of that song.
Born in the USA, my bad.
There you go.
25.
What was that, Bruce Springsteen in the Range? Oh, yeah, I love that Bruce Springsteen in the Range.
No, that was actually Bruce Springsteen in the News. So.
Oh, yeah.
He purposely left misleading clues in the devices and took extreme care in preparing them to avoid leaving fingerprints. Latent fingerprints on some of the devices did not match those. But think about it. It's getting processed at a mail facility. Mm-hmm. Tons of people are touching it. And also remind yourselves that when he made these bombs, he made them without electricity. So he was like, by sunlight and whatever
candlelight
he could generate with no soldering equipment or anything like that.
Rub 2 turtles together. really hot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is not cowabunga, dude. My shell's gonna have a wicked rash.
Turtle flint.
Turtle flint.
Just trying to make sparks with mm-hmm. his hatchet off the back of the turtle shell.
Kaczynski's first mail bomb was directed at Buckley Christ, who's not related to Jesus, but
his cousin, Buckley.
Yep.
A professor,
thank you for the clarification.
A professor of materials engineering at Northwestern University. On May 25th, 1978, a package bearing Christ's return address was found in a parking lot.
One Jesus Street.
I'm sorry, Christ's return address.
Christ's return address always took 3 days.
The package was returned to Christ, who was suspicious because he had not sent the package. So he contacted campus police, and Officer Terry Marker opened the package, which exploded and injured his left hand.
God, why do they keep sending me these 9-inch packages? It's not funny, guys.
Kaczynski had returned to Illinois for the May 1978 bombing and stayed there for a time to work with his father and brother at a foam rubber factory. However, in August of 78, he was fired by his brother for writing insulting limericks about a female supervisor who he had briefly... That's the one he courted. The one he went on a...
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
So yep. To get back at her after their...
He made a bad rhyme.
Bad rhyme.
Nice.
I'm the Unabomber, and I'm here to say...
He didn't really have a name then.
No.
I'm not sure what...
MC Unabom.
My name is Kaczynski.
Teddy K. Didn't go by...
The female supervisor later recalled Kaczynski as intelligent and quiet, but remembered little of their acquaintance and firmly denied they had any romantic relationship.
Stinky Ted.
Now, the FBI got involved after the 78 bombing and was followed by bombs sent to airline officials. Now, that's part of the thing. It went to universities and airlines. So, mm-hmm. Unabomber.
University bomber, yeah.
Yeah. In 1979, a bomb was placed in the cargo hold of American Airlines Flight 444, a Boeing 727 flying from Chicago to Washington, D.C. A faulty timing mechanism prevented the bomb from exploding, but it released smoke, which forced an emergency landing. Which, I mean, he'd be on a whole other level at that point.
Yeah.
Authorities said it had enough power to obliterate the plane had it exploded.
Wow.
As bombing, being a passenger and finding that out.
Right, and at that time you could probably smoke on a plane. So somebody probably thought somebody put out a bad cigar in here. God damn it! I'm trying to get to DC. I just want to smoke my Newports, not smell somebody's nasty ass. Is that stinky milk?
Something like Peter Griffin.
As bombing an airliner is a federal crime, the FBI became involved, designating the case Unabomb for university and airline bomber. Kaczynski left false clues in every bomb, which he made hard to find to make them believable. The first clue was a metal plate stamped with the initials FC hidden somewhere, usually in the pipe end cap in every bomb. Another clue included a note left in a bomb that did not detonate. It read, it said, "Woo, it works. I told you it would," with the initials RV, which is actually one of the people that he worked with in the past he didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
Another clue was the Eugene O'Neill $1 stamps used to send his boxes. He sent one bomb embedded in a copy of Sloan Wilson's novel Ice Brothers. The FBI theorized that Kaczynski had a theme of nature, trees, and wood in his crimes. He often included bits of tree branch and bark in his bombs. So that's kind of like DIY shrapnel. Mm-hmm.
And target. We're getting hit by a stick.
what is this?
It's a grass.
It's an acorn.
Oh,
it's
a, I got a splinter.
It's like it's a pop
bomb from a bunch of squirrels.
His dandelions, those little. Oh, God, it's an allergy bomb.
Ragweed.
God, am I in an Enya music video here?
Now, his targets selected included Percy Wood and Professor Leroy Wood. Crime writer Robert Graysmith noted that his obsession with wood was a large factor. Now, the first serious injury occurred in 1985 when John Hauser, a graduate student and captain in the U.S. Air Force, lost 4 fingers and vision in one eye. The bomb, like others of Kaczynski's, was handcrafted and made with wooden parts. Hugh Scruton, a 38-year-old Sacramento, California computer store owner, was killed in 1985 by a nail and splinter loaded bomb placed in the parking lot of his store. A similar attack against a computer store occurred in Salt Lake City, Utah on February 20th, 1987. The bomb, which was disguised as a piece of lumber, injured Gary Wright when he attempted to remove it from the store's parking lot.
Can you imagine getting injured over a Tandy?
Mm-mm. The explosion. I'm just paving right. I'm paving that, a road
that,
right past
that here. Joke lay just laid there like that bomb. Never went off.
Faulty timer on it.
I was just saying, Tandys were popular.
Emergency landing, BCM 727.
I don't know what a Tandy is.
It's a computer back in the 80s.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I see it.
Mm-hmm. See, when I have to explain the joke, it really is not good.
Grinding to a halt.
Too young.
I am embarrassed.
When Larry's new segment, Grinding to a Halt.
That, yeah, great.
Hey, you have a segment now,
Grinding
Larry.
Grinding to a Halt. Jokes for the 40 plus.
This one goes out to the AARP.
Back when computers were beige, okay? When beige was the natural color of computers.
All before the Apple computers from the 90s.
This is when the discs were that big.
What were those called? Like the iFruit? What were those?
All right. Moving ahead, the explosion severed nerves in Wright's left arm and propelled more than 200 pieces of shrapnel into his body.
Ooh.
Not party.
Yikes.
In 1993, after a 6-year break, Kaczynski mailed a bomb to David Glertner, a computer science professor at Yale. The guy's got, doesn't have like multiple chins. He's got one giant bullfrog chin.
My name is Glertner.
Sorry, sir.
Every word he says is comes out with not moving his mouth.
Bullfrog throat and shitclit black teeth. Though critically injured, Glertner recovered. Oh, I don't know if we should have made fun of this poor man.
Yeah, what if he listens to the show?
God damn, you guys are me.
I'm glad you're kicking it, bud. So
swear to God, I got a 31 on my ACT.
I would kick it, but they cut off my foot.
Though critically injured, Glertner recovered. In the same weekend, Kaczynski mailed a bomb to the home of Charles Epstein from the University of California, San Francisco, who lost several fingers upon opening it. Kaczynski then called Glertner's brother, Joel Glertner, a behavioral geneticist, and told him, "You're next." Wow.
Jeez.
Geneticist Philip Sharp at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology received a threatening letter 2 years later.
Hmm.
1994, Burson Marsteller, executive Thomas J. Moser, was killed by a mail bomb sent to his home in North Caldwell, New Jersey. In another letter to New York Times, Kaczynski said he blew up Thomas Moser because Burston Marsteller helped Exxon clean up its public image after the Exxon Valdez incident.
Mm. Mm.
And more importantly, because, quote, its business is the development of techniques for manipulating people's attitudes.
Oh, so what we have here is a guy who's trying to go, like, he thinks he's Batman.
He's a vigilante bomber.
Like, yeah.
He actually thinks he's doing good.
Right.
Yeah, no, and if you listen to him in interviews, he definitely does not sound like he's sympathetic at all.
No, he thinks he's innocent in all
right.
of this.
Right. Much like McVeigh did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he somehow knows he's doing wrong.
By the way, Kaczynski was literally like, either he saw it in the paper or was on a TV when he was walking around the library when he found out, because this happened close to Oklahoma City bombing, and he was furious because he's like, "Motherfucker, that's my shit. I'm the bomber, not you."
Oh, he's biting my style.
He's taking my shit. I'm Batman, not you. You're whatever you are.
You're Robin.
Not even Robin. You're droppins.
You're Condiment King.
Condiment King.
So anyway. He this was followed by the 95 murder of Gilbert Brent Murray, president of the timber industry lobbying group, California Forestry Association, by a mail bomb addressed to previous president William Dennison, who had retired. And there's a full breakthrough. You can see like basically each individual bombing, but we have got to keep moving. So in 1995, Kaczynski mailed several letters to media outlets outlining his goals and demanding that his 35,000-word essay, like we mentioned before, his manifesto, Industrial Society and the Future, and its future, be printed verbatim by a major newspaper. He stated that if this demand was met, he would desist from terrorism. And by the way, Bob Guccione of Penthouse, who volunteered to publish it, Kaczynski replied that Penthouse was less respectable than other publications. He said that he would reserve the right to plant at least one bomb if they were to publish it. So he basically was like, I'll stop being a terrorist, but I get one more bomb. But you got to publish it. He wrote the manifesto on a typewriter, without italics. He capitalized every entire words to show emphasis. He always referred to himself as either we of the Freedom Club or FC, though there is no evidence that he worked with others.
Squirrels.
Maybe. Hey, I mean, that's a conspiracy we could have just come up with on this episode.
I dig it.
So, Alton Chase reported in The Atlantic that the text was greeted in 95 by many thoughtful people as a work of genius, or at least profound. People found it profound and is quite sane. Which, to be honest with you, it actually inspired future people to do bad things. That's so descriptive. No, Anders Breivik, the shooter, the guy that killed 77. He detonated a van bomb and then shot 69 participants at a workers' youth league. Ooh. I don't know if you guys remember that.
No, but it sounds like a future episode.
Yeah, he was a Norwegian far-right terrorist.
Mm.
So, just saying, he said he had listed the manifesto as an influence. And I can see people... The thing is, at this point, Honey Nut Cheerios could be an influence for a terrorist. There's a million different...
They're delicious. I'll tell you that much. I didn't have dinner tonight. That sounds really good.
Yeah.
Ooh. Have you ever had the Meyer brand Fruit Loops? Because they're better than the actual Fruit Loop brand Fruit Loops.
It's true.
I try to stay away from those yummy cereals, but Golden Grahams keeps calling my name.
I know. That's the best one.
Let me just, I have the Industrial Society and its future pulled up. Let me just read a little brief part. Is that cool?
Okay. Do you need a voice or anything? You just want to read it? Just read it.
No, I'll read it. So this is the first paragraph of the introduction.
Should we do our game? Are we over under the mispronunciations?
How long is it? Is it lengthy?
About 7 sentences.
Eight? I'm going to go with 5.
Wow. I'm going with 2.
I have faith in our lovely... funny, handsome host. I'm going to say 0.
He's not drinking. That's why I'm not a little drinking. Low.
Oh, that's true.
Don't let me down, Ryan.
Industrial Society and Its Future by Theodore Kaczynski, 1995. Introduction. The Industrial Revolution and its consequences have been a disaster for the human race. They have greatly increased the life expectancy of those of us who live in advanced countries, but they have destabilized society, have made life unfulfilling, have subjected human beings to indignities, have led to widespread psychological suffering in the third world, physical suffering as well, and have inflicted severe damage on the natural world. The continued development of technology will worsen the situation. It will certainly subject human being to greater indignities and inflict greater damage on the natural world. It will probably lead to greater social disruption and psychological suffering, and it may lead to increased physical suffering, even advanced countries.
God.
So proud of you. See? Sobercast.
Sobercast.
But anyway.
You know what? I give that a 29 on the ACT.
Yeah, you got a
I got a 34, so I'm pretty sure that allows me to change scores.
You're like the queen. You can knight people with extra ACT points.
Yeah, I just knighted you with an extra 4 points.
Thank you. The manifesto echoed contemporary critics of technology industrialization, such as John Zerzan, Jacques Ellul, Rachel Carson, Lewis Mumford, and E.F. Schmacher.
I have the Schmacher fame.
His
knockoff jelly.
His cousins make jam and jelly.
Its idea of the disruption of the power process similarly echoed social critics, emphasizing the lack of meaningful work as a primary cause of social problems, including Mumford, Paul Goodman, and Eric Hoffer. Its general theme was also addressed by Aldous Huxley in the book Brave New World. I don't know if you guys remember that. That was a great book. to which Kaczynski refers in the text. Kaczynski's ideas of over-socialization, which I think we have now, to be honest with you, that we are overly a social media, socially.
I think what it is, a social media is you can kind of only present the best parts of your life, which can create, I don't know, jealousy or guilt.
Depression. If you think your life isn't going the way that...
Trust me, that person's having a shitty life. Having shitty things happen to him, too.
That being said, I've heard, and I don't know if you guys would agree with this, but I've heard speculation that the amount of social media usage is actually going down.
I do know a few people who've definitely quit Facebook.
Yeah. I know a couple people have deleted Facebook. They have Twitter, but very rarely use it and don't use any of the photo apps.
They made it, I mean, Twitter's good for news.
Yeah.
I do like following news on them. But
I think the only social media that I use frequently would be Facebook. I deleted Twitter, deleted Instagram, deleted Snapchat. Yeah.
It's hard to have like multiples of those because anytime
it's hard to keep up.
Yeah.
I would not have Facebook if it wasn't for this podcast.
I can kind of side
I have to be on it to be able to post.
Yeah.
I use Twitter for, it's almost like my Facebook and Twitter is like a different person because Twitter is all about the gaming stuff I do. But before I did all this gaming stuff, I rarely used Twitter.
Twitter was kind of, for jokes. That's what I usually post on there.
Yeah. I would go on there once every like
jokes that would probably offend my family. So.
Right. Yep. I just be like, I need to post on this more 7 months later. I really should post on this more.
Yep.
Bill Joy, co-founder of Sun Microsystems, wrote that Kaczynski is clearly a Luddite, but simply saying this does not dismiss his argument. Anders Breivik, who I mentioned, the perpetrator of the 2011 Norway attacks, published a manifesto and copied large portions from Industrial Society and Its Future with certain terms substituted, e.g. replacing leftist with cultural Marxist, which is kind of the thing the far right will do when labeling the left as like socialist, communist, whatever.
It's more fun to label people than to actually get to know them.
Yeah, exactly.
University of Michigan Dearborn philosophy professor David Skirbina helped to compile Kaczynski's work into the 2010 anthology Technological Slavery, including the original manifesto, letters between Skirbina and Kaczynski, and other essays. Kaczynski updated his 95 manifesto as Anti-Tech Revolution, Why and How to Address Advance... The manifesto was updated as Anti-Tech Revolution, Why and How. And it was to address advances in computers and the internet. He advocates practicing other types of protests and makes no mention of violence. And he is still alive. Yeah,
you're not going to. You can't drag your feet on technology. It's always going to move forward.
Whether you like it or not. Yeah. I mean, it's everywhere.
I'd actually just read a really interesting article calling out like the boomer generation for, because they always have that like, well, I don't know how to work this thing, when like you have no excuse anymore.
Well, they're the generation that invented a lot of it.
Exactly. And you know, for as long as it's been around, there really is no excuse to not know how any of this
like I can
functions.
See my grand
exactly
my grandfather, he's 90, I get it,
but as a boomer, like at that point you're just unwilling to learn. Like, don't complain that you don't know how this stuff works if you're not putting in the effort to learn how it works.
I think it's just an off way for them to try to interact with someone.
Oh, for sure.
I can't think of what to say, and they're just like, my phone's funny.
My dad just got a smartphone and made an emoji of himself.
Nice.
I was very proud.
Very cool.
My dad has a smartphone, and he just plays Trivia Crack all the fucking time. So fun.
It is.
He actually has multiple accounts. So that if he, you know, because he's like, you can only play so long on one day or at a time. He's like, that's why I have two accounts. I could switch to the other one.
He's addicted.
That one, yeah,
he's crack.
Yeah. I play a lot of Words with Friends.
That's fun, too.
If anyone wants to challenge me on Words with Friends.
I know somebody that you refuse to play with.
Yes, I refuse to play with Joshua Noble because he's too smart And he, I played like 8 games with him and he beat me every time.
Not just beat.
He
where she was a 34 on.
Yeah.
He was a 35.
Yeah. It was like a blowout. Like wow. I had a score of like 179. And he was like a 420. It was bad.
That's me on Madden when I played online. Mm-hmm. I'm good at Madden. 242-0.
Yeah.
That's humbling.
So if anyone wants to play me,
I made that number up, but it was not good.
Yeah.
I'm good at recording pooping sounds.
Okay, let's talk pop culture before you play that shit again.
Literally.
Thank you.
It's time for the Pop Culture Minute with Josh. Sonic Boom!
So, let's talk bombers and bombings and stuff like that.
Okay.
Movies, like, for example, you could say games, like, you know, I played a shitload of Bomberman growing up. That was a fun game.
So, you know what bomb movie I liked? Speed.
That was a great
movie.
Oh,
yeah.
I saw that in a drive-in movie theater.
Sandra Bullock.
I was like 8 years old, yeah. But I loved it. I've always appreciated the pairing of Sandra Bullock and it was Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
They work together again.
They do. It was a good movie.
Speed 2?
Not so much.
Did you hear that supposedly during the making of that movie, Keanu had a crush on Sandra?
I mean, who wouldn't?
Yeah.
And she's America's sweetheart. I have a crush on Sandra Bullock.
It was vice versa. They just never acted on it.
What? Oh, no.
Remember that when you watch the movie. Fun Ryan facts.
What would their Hollywood name be? Like how, what is it?
Kimye
and like how they combine the guy and the girl's name.
Boo Boo Kitty Fuck.
It would be
Keanu and who?
Sandra.
Reeves and
Keandra.
Bullock.
Keandra.
Keandra is probably.
Yeah, that's probably as close as you're going to get. Bull Reeves? No.
No.
Bull Reeves.
Just believe.
I think he got it.
Sinew.
I'm hip. No. I'm with it. I would also say Blown Away, which is an older movie that was, I think, is Jeff Bridges and Tommy Lee Jones.
Nice.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
With the TNT.
Very true.
They never really learned their lesson on that show.
No, Donald Duck either. Bill spilling around. You think you'd learn when your bill's on the other side of your head. Nope.
Maybe you guys could remind me, because my memory's kind of fuzzy on this. This classic Christmas film, Die Hard. Isn't there a bomb in that building?
The building explodes.
Dude, you could say just about any action movie.
Pretty much. Something blows up.
Michael Bay
owns this, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, this is weird. We've covered so many bombing episodes. We got Bath.
We'd be here all day.
Speaking of a Christmas movie, mm-hmm. Jingle All the Way. We watch it every Christmas, and there's the scene where
the mailman with
the mailman has a package that he says is a bomb, and he's lying. But then they get the bomb squad down there. And the cop's like,
episode from IT.
Yeah, yes.
The IT
I
crowd.
Love that one.
What operating system are you running?
Windows 10. We're all going to die.
You dropped a bomb on me, baby.
Also, I was going to say.
Sex bomb.
I love setting off proximity mines in different mines in Goldeneye. Mm-hmm. That's all I can think of in my head right now.
Minesweeper?
Yeah,
Minesweeper, right? Yep. Minesweeper, the game that literally no one knows how to play.
It's free.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's about it for pop culture, mm-hmm.
though. Yeah.
Let us have a verdict, if we could, my friend. One corner,
Stinky Ted.
And his squirrel army.
Mm-hmm. Squirrel and turtle army on a bison.
On a bison. Listening to Bruce Springsteen in the news.
Oh, I was hoping it was the turtles.
The turtle. In the other corner, 4 podcasters you know and trust for the pod family won't let you down. We have to weigh in. Do you think that if David Kaczynski would have never figured that out with his, along with his wife... that he would have went on to become the most prolific killer of our time?
No.
No?
Because they posted, like he said he was going to stop if they posted his manifesto, and they did.
Well, okay.
So I think...
he was caught in 96.
For some odd reason, I know, I was a male prostitute. I just started my male prostituting career, so I remember the kind of on-the-edgeness of working there at that time.
Well, it was funny, too, because they said when I was researching that all the FBI agents, like, dressed up like fishermen or, like, a random guy, just like... And they're so out of place. They're just like this.
I can only imagine that it's a bunch of like guys dressed as fishermen, but like with black Ray-Bans and like an earpiece. Nice. Like they're reeling in a fish, trying to fit in.
A suit jacket.
Yeah.
A tie.
Well, I ain't never seen nobody in Montana shoot a buck with a suit on.
Hello, my fellow fisher people.
Gee,
have you caught any fishing?
Have you caught any fish with bombs?
What are you using for the bait?
Have you caught any
fish? You look like a master baiter over there.
Oh, that's Stinky Ted. Leave him alone. All he ever wants to do is read Harry Potter, the most classical of all novels.
Some mechanic is standing there like he has this grease like on like a football player on his. Have you ever started a car with a bomb?
You walk into a cafe. Anybody here serving bombs? Just like the worst inept FBI agent. But yeah, that's how they infiltrated it. And actually, one of the guys said he was like from the government surveying the land. Mm-hmm. And so that's eventually how they got him to come out.
Yeah, Jim.
So anyway, continuing on. So
I think he would have kept his promise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. April?
Yeah, I think either, like Larry said, he would have kept his promise, or if he did continue on, I think there's only a certain amount of time that you can get away with something like that before you slip up.
Okay.
And, you know, considering...
I filed a change of address.
Missed him. Well, and considering business, the fact Unabomber. That he was, like we had talked about earlier, that he was doing everything either by sunlight or candlelight... You know, there are only so many times you can do that without making a mistake. And
in your own life?
Exactly. Well, and with the nature of what he was doing, and because the FBI were so involved and all, you know, the resources that they had, it would only take one tiny, tiny slip up for them to know it was him. So either he would have stopped or he would have gotten caught soon after.
I disagree with both of you. Because... given the fact that he did not like technology, he wasn't using Facebook or so. Obviously that didn't really exist at the time, but
AOL barely existed.
You know, he didn't have internet. He didn't have any kind of electrical trace to where he was. And the thing is we know that technology is what bothered him, right? Mm-hmm. It's only gotten worse. You know, technology is literally everywhere. I mean, drones and whatnot flying around. Maybe he would have been fine for a while. I'll give you that. That he would have been like, okay, I'm not going to kill anybody. No more bombs. But then, like a bomb waiting to go off, watching as technology grows and grows. And even this little town, all of a sudden they have fast internet. Mm-hmm. Now they have drones and everything else. He would have slipped eventually and come back into it. To be the most prolific of all time, no, but I think he would have killed again.
See, I think with the safety that is done through prostitution, it has really, like, you don't see that. You don't see bombs anymore in the mail. It's completely stopped.
Sure.
And I think he would have had to hand deliver it. So
yeah.
I think that he could have killed more. I think that he would have probably eventually, I think he... That switch wasn't there. He thought he was a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And he was only getting better at making bombs. I mean, initially his like tree forest squirrel bombs were kind of, you know, they weren't doing the thing. He was a genius. He was amazing when it came to figuring out how to make that whole thing work. And progressively got worse and worse. I mean, he could have eventually, like I said, he was envious of McVeigh and how the Oklahoma City bombing went down. So who knows what he could have tried to ramp up to. But I think you're right in some ways. I think that maybe he hit a moment there where it was almost like truce time.
Didn't we just have some attempt to mail bombs earlier this year to like CNN and to senators and Congress people, and they were able to fish them out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wasn't one sent actually to the Obamas?
I think so. Or Biden. One of the two. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They had a certain lesson. No. All right.
Yeah, I do remember that now. Crazy.
I thought you said the bomb pussy.
Another vegan. That's been your verdict. So now it's time for us to do what we love to do every fan vote episode and have our mail sack.
Mail sack.
All righty. I'm in charge of the sack this month.
You have a segment.
I have a sackment.
Two of them.
I do. Two of them. Oh, yeah. Grind it to a halt. I forget about that one. I'm trying to forget that one for the rest of my life. Back when computers were beige. Mm-hmm. Okay. Here are the questions. Question number one is from Kevin Yarrow. People are saying there is a link between the Unabomber and the Zodiac Killer. Actually, that was more of a statement.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we kind of covered it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can talk about that briefly. In 96, San Francisco detectives investigated the possibility the Unabomber Ted Kaczynski could be the infamous Zodiac Killer. The new twist in the investigation was spurred by amateur sleuths who discovered the similarities between Kaczynski's profile and Zodiac's behavior. According to investigators, the Unabomber lived in the Bay Area from 67 to 69, which we covered. During the time, the Zodiac claimed at least five lives in late 1968 and the summer and fall of 69. Also, a man similar in appearance to Kaczynski was seen near one of the crime scenes. Even more interesting is that Kaczynski once signed a high school yearbook with the symbol similar to the Zodiac's infamous logo.
Interesting.
Now, however, both the FBI and the San Francisco Police Department eliminated Kaczynski as a suspect using scientific fingerprint and writing comparisons. Robert Graysmith, the author of Zodiac, said that the similarities are fascinating, but undoubtedly purely coincidental.
I believe the writing thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because his brother was able to pick his writing up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yep.
Question number two is from Janessa Froge.
Shirt lady.
When?
I still got to figure that out.
Is the next live stream?
I'm glad you should ask.
I have an idea. Mm-hmm. We can all throw our dates out here. I was thinking maybe we could do a Thanksgiving weekend, maybe a Podsgiving.
Yeah.
Podsgiving sounds great.
Synergy, baby. Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. Yeah.
So we're going to say like for Black now Friday until we figure out the day, late November ish.
Yeah. Cool.
Thanksgiving weekend.
We're glad you guys like that. If you're into it, check out twitch.tv/BoboMay because that's where we stream from and you can be involved.
Mm-hmm.
We had a nice little showing last time.
It was really fun. We had a really good time.
Mm-hmm. Especially once Ryan showed up.
When, yes. Which was eventually.
Yeah.
Oh,
boy. I woke up from a nap when the live stream was supposed to start.
Yep. Wide Adam asks, an unknown package shows up at your doorstep. Without thinking about the Unabomber, do you open it? And just for funsies, what's inside?
If it's addressed to me, I guess is my thought.
Okay, unknown package, so.
So I don't know
where
it's coming
from. We'll say
from.
You don't know what's coming from, but let's say your name's on it, yeah. Do you open it?
You know what? I know my wife, and she'll say yes.
I'm just going to throw it out there that if it's on my doorstep, I'm opening it regardless.
It's coming. Yeah, I'm just going to assume someone ordered it, whether it was me or Aaron or Chewy.
What? If it was like, oh, Robert
England
Zanzibar is
Zanzibar.
It's addressed to Robert Zanzibar. I'm like, hey, well, made it here. It better did. See what's in it. I'm very nosy. I'm naturally just a very nosy person, so
I probably wouldn't open it. No, personally.
Okay.
You guys all have your like male prostitute code that you live by, I'm sure.
I live and die by the prostitute's code.
What's inside?
Live and swallow by dildos. The prostitute's
code. Damn, that's
dildos.
Double-sided dildo.
No, just
I bought
just
a dildo.
Okay. I was gonna say I guess it's probably a hat.
Okay.
Or some hat I don't remember ordering. Josh Shoup says lots of questions, folks. No, just kidding.
That guy's an asshole.
But Josh, Tiffany Avery asks, are there any video game conspiracies oddities out there other than polybias? What about board games?
Is that like for people who have sex with video games? Is that another LGBTQ acronym?
Better learn it.
Polybias. I have sex with Mario Kart.
There are some definitely some fascinating things I've seen over the years. There's the Legend of Zelda
Majora's Mask
conspiracy, quote unquote, that I've seen where there was a haunted cartridge.
Some say just a creepypasta, but
yeah, and that's kind of interesting. There's also, again, Pokemon with Red and Blue, the Lavender Town theme. It's very unsettling sounding, and apparently that's had some kind of an effect on kids in Japan. But as far as conspiracies within a game, I mean, y'all have heard me say it many times, but Metal Gear is by far the best when it comes to conspiracies.
Okay. Janessa again asks, favorite color?
Red.
Black.
Pink.
For the longest time for me, it was orange, but I've gone black.
You won't go back.
And I won't go back. It's impossible. El Pete.
The Pete.
What conspiracy, not a cryptid, are you sure is real that you most wish wasn't?
Franklin cover-up.
Oh.
Yeah, I gotta agree. That is one of the horrific ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Franklin cover-up, without a doubt.
I would have to say either, yeah, Franklin cover-up is hard for me to say because I wasn't on that episode and I have not listened to that episode. I don't care to listen to that episode.
Good idea.
So for me personally, of the ones that we've covered, I would say either Casey Anthony or JonBenet.
Oh, yeah.
Those
are brutal. Mm-hmm. And what conspiracy are you sure isn't real, but you most wish was?
Probably a cryptid.
But it says not a cryptid.
Oh, shit. I didn't see that. One that you don't think is real.
But you wish it was.
Damn it.
I'm going to say JFK so people would shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
I'm going to say moon landing. I don't know why.
Veiny moon rocks.
I like the honesty there.
I would say the Dulce Wars.
Okay.
Which would be, I don't think it's real, but it's so fascinating that there was like alien wars underground and like tunnels, like shootouts.
Mm.
But also it's just kind of, I mean, I believe there are aliens, but that's just so far-fetched to imagine like some sort of like Star Trekian, like underground, like crazy bullshit.
Yeah, it's like super trooper.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think for me, it would probably be one of our haunting episodes, Amityville or Enfield.
It's a good pick because I kind of confirm your ghost theory there.
It's a gray area whether I feel that's real or not. But if I would love to see that it's confirmed as real.
El Pete asks, if you could sit down and have a few beers and a conversation safely with any cryptid, which one would it be?
You know what? I'm gonna go with the furry man, the big man, Bigfoot.
Ah.
Because we both are hairy individuals, and I feel like his...
They would comb each other's beards together.
They would.
I feel like he would probably enjoy a beer that's not too super heavy, like an IPA. I'd drink an IPA.
Looking all day?
Fun. Yeah.
I would sit down with a mermaid, I think. That would be my... Because I just think it would be fascinating to like because this sort of ties into like the Atlantis thing that we had talked about. I would want to learn. I would want to know everything there is to know about that.
I think I would be into sitting down and having smoking some CBD pipe oil with a puckwudgie.
Okay. I'm going to go with Cactus Cat.
Oh, yeah.
Because it produces tequila.
Damn.
True.
You can drink cheap on the cheap all night long.
Multitasking.
You'd have to like squeeze it out of its Cactus Cat nipple, though.
That's fine.
Like it's got a row of eight nipples that just only produce tequila.
I'm a keyboard player. I think I could pull that off. Matt McShitterman. Do you find it hard to watch or listen to things with actors or singers that are in Scientology or other cults? I was a huge fan of the 70s show and Veronica Mars, but now that I know some actors on those shows are Scientologists, I can't watch it anymore.
I don't honestly think it bothers me that much. I mean, Scientology is fucked up, and as we said, future episode, but like, I also watched that 70s show, and I loved it. It didn't bother me.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. I'm able to suspend my belief for long enough to enjoy a fucking TV show. Like, I don't agree with their personal beliefs. I mean, even one that's more recent, and I still love him as a person, but I don't agree with his beliefs in the church he goes to, is Chris Pratt. Mm-hmm. I love Chris Pratt. Not necessarily do I fully agree with his beliefs, but I still love Guardians. Mm-hmm. I love Parks and Rec. Jurassic World. I believe that you can separate the art from the artist in that sort of circumstance.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with it now, but I think initially when I found out that Tom Cruise and John Travolta were Scientologists, it kind of bothered me, especially because that I want to say this was about 4 years ago. When I really, I knew about it, but I didn't know about it. I didn't know about the religion. Once I figured out what it was, and I was like, oh, this is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember distinctly like a Mission Impossible coming out, and I'm like, fuck that movie. And then my friend Marty, our friend of the show, Marty, was like, why? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, why? He's a good actor. Who cares what he does when he's not in movies? And then I kind of thought of that, and I was like, fucking Marty, shut up.
He's always like, right. God damn.
Yeah, and then I go watch the movie and I'm like, that movie fucking ruled.
I think I was more disturbed by Tom Cruise jumping on, was it Oprah's couch?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Than when I learned, because by that point he'd already jumped on the couch when he, you know, revealed the whole Scientology thing. So we were just like, meh.
Mm. Right. I don't care. You do you. I'll watch what you do. If you're good at it.
Yeah.
If you're not good at it, I won't watch it or listen to it. It's the same thing with political beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know I have someone who refuses to eat Ben and Jerry's because of their political
contributions. Fucking hippies.
Like, who cares? Yeah. If you enjoy it, eat it.
Well, my even locally.
Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know it's you know, they give to anti-gay things, but they're not going to win that war. So what? Just give me some barbecue sauce.
Well, and even locally, Anna's house, they were found out that they donated a bunch of money to Trump's campaign.
Right. Okay.
But, hey, still, they all make good chicken and waffles. Yeah. So
those chicken and waffles are
the ever expanding
good breakfast
oatmeal.
I had their breakfast burrito. It was fantastic. Yeah.
I'm hungry now. Mm-hmm.
You know,
I'm starving.
I think Friday morning I might.
You had meatloaf.
Doesn't mean I can't be starving.
Fine.
You look starving.
Mm-hmm. Dying.
Me too. I'm skin and bones. I didn't eat dinner tonight.
I don't even have that. I'm just a puddle.
Okay, this is a fun one from Miss Skylar Tibbs.
Oh, who? No, I'm just kidding. I love
Never heard her.
I love you, Skylar.
If life was a video game, what achievement did you recently get?
Oh, great.
I got a platinum in glaucoma.
I got a platinum in a broken heart.
God. Oh.
I honestly can't think of anything.
I heard an audio clip all episode of an achievement you unlocked, deviled eggs.
I got a platinum in covering the toilet and poo-poo.
Yeah, I guess who gets to clean that toilet? This girl right here.
You got that achievement.
Yeah. No, actually, more recently today, I survived having a stage 5 panic attack as I was driving down the highway with my son in the car.
That's a good one to achieve.
We're saying stage 5, like top bad.
I felt like I was gonna pass out. Like, really? It was either pulled to the side of the road or.
Are you having a lot of those recently?
That's the worst one that I've had probably since before I met Josh.
What did you do to calm down?
Grounding. I don't know if you've ever tried it, because I know you have panic attacks occasionally. Yeah. Grounding is a method of, because you feel so out of body when it happens. Mm-hmm. It's bringing yourself back into yourself. And it's 5 things that you can see, 4 things that you can touch, 3 things that you can hear, 2 things that you can smell, and 1 thing that you can taste.
Wow.
And making yourself aware of all those things. And I was able to, it was a shorter. The severity was really bad, but the length of it was much less because of grounding.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
The more you know.
Okay, Skylar goes on with, what are some of the best combinations in the world? My favorite is ice water, tacos, and weed. Not mine, that's hers.
Mm. Oh, combinations.
Yeah.
She said ice water, tacos,
and weed.
Steak and blowjobs?
No, pancakes, dear. Pancakes.
No, I don't know. I'm going to go with best combination is date night with my wife, in which we go out for a hot tub, mm-hmm. good dinner, and a movie.
It's true. That is the trifecta for us.
Uh-huh. Cat just face planted. We just
trying to sleep in a bag and you just watch him roll off.
Yep.
Anyway, Zelda took a dive. So keep going.
My favorite combination would be actually similar to what we're experiencing right now. Fall.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit chilly.
Mm-hmm.
Dreary. Mm-hmm. Warm blanket. Nap.
A blanket, a couch, and a old-timey blockbuster video horror movie.
Yes,
for sure. Mm.
I'm going to say, I can't beat a Vitaly's pizza and an ice cold Coca-Cola.
Press Little Caesars and Mountain Dew.
Okay.
For whatever reason, pepperoni pizza and Mountain Dew are like...
It's so good.
BFFs. Sure. Just like me and Skylar.
Speaking of Skylar, here's another question. What's the creepiest thing that has ever happened to you?
Shit.
Ooh, I have a recent one that I don't know if I mentioned. I don't think I mentioned this on podcast. I brought it up to Josh. This is creepy, not in like a spooky, spooky way, but creepy in like an ew, get away from me way.
Mm-hmm.
I was at Walmart. Was it last week, I think, and I was picking up some produce. And I was standing looking at the apples, just like investigating the types of apples, when an older gentleman, maybe early 50s, came up to me and he was.
Sorry.
Yeah, he came up to me holding 2 peaches, 2 large peaches.
Oh, God.
And he comes up to me and like in the creepiest voice goes, look at these peaches. I'm like, yeah. He goes, wait,
so this was an old man?
Not old, like early 50s. And he goes, look at these peaches. Aren't they big? And I was like, yeah, they are.
Is that like his?
And he goes, he goes, I like them big. I'm like, cool. He goes, my wife thinks it's weird that I like them this big, but I just really like them big. And I was like, cool story, bro. And I jetted out of there. So then I like came back. And at this point now, I'm looking at vegetables and I'm trying to pick zucchinis. And I grab a zucchini and this fucker saunters back up to me and he goes,
you like pineapples?
Looks like you like them big, too.
What a creep.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, goodbye. I'm checking out now.
This has been sexual harassment at Meijer.
Yeah.
You like peaches? I can eat a peach for hours.
It felt
dirty.
Gross. Well, like, it was so icky.
Dirty old men still exist.
Yep.
Anybody else have a scary recent or
not scary, creepy?
Okay.
I would say I was at a club. This is back in my early 20s. And this guy was interested in me.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. But he kept putting his hands all over my body. Like grabbing my ass, grabbing my chest, mm-hmm. grabbing my crotch. It just creeped me mm-hmm. the fuck out. It was just totally inappropriate. Mm-hmm.
It was unwanted.
That's and I didn't know what to do.
Yep.
Like mm-hmm. I froze and mm-hmm. didn't know what to do.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing about situations like that with sexual harassment. Same as the guy that was at Walmart. Like, for whatever reason, our first instinct is to like laugh about it instead of mm-hmm. being like, dude, get your fucking big peaches away from me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so gross. So,
I'm sorry, but like just for you to be a
big fuzzy peaches.
Mm-hmm. Gosh.
You've had some interesting creepy prostituting situations when you were when you were at that nursing home.
Oh yeah. There's this place that I've delivered packages to three times now where the first two times I went there, I didn't know where these packages went. I didn't know that you just brought them in and gave them to somebody in the front. I thought you had to still bring them to the door of the people. So I go in and I was like, hey, how do I get to this place? And they're like, you got to take the elevator up. So I take the elevator up and I deliver these packages. And I come down, I get down the elevator. And as soon as it opens, there's a wall right in front of you. And then it's a hallway and it goes to the right, make maybe 2 or 3 feet. And it like makes like a Z shape, the hall. And then there's the front entrance. There are no mirrors anywhere. I have double checked. I've triple checked. There's nothing there. But I have seen the first time I saw somebody like walk by.
Okay.
And then I like ducked, I thought they said something. So I poked my head out and nobody's there. And then I had another time or the same thing, actually. Mm-hmm. It was almost the exact same thing. And I even called the normal prostitute on the route. And she told me, like, yeah, there's been a lot of people that died here because it's an old folks home. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, it's very possible that's what you saw. Oh. And then I also had it where there was a prostitute room in a building where there's one way in. There's no other way. There's no mirrors. There's no nothing. And I was standing there and I saw as somebody kind of it came in, walked behind me, going towards the wall of the opposite side. And I went to turn around to say something and nobody was there. Again, old folks home. So.
Wow.
Cool.
Yeah.
I would say there was once a time where I lived in a haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty guaranteed of that. And there was one time we all ran outside and built a snow fort and waited for mom and dad to get home. And it got dark out and we just kept staring in thinking like somebody was going to like specter us, steal our souls.
Right.
Anyway.
And Skylar's last question. You're stuck in a horror movie and can bring one fictional character to help you survive. Who do you choose?
Luke Skywalker.
Well,
okay.
Okay.
The Incredible Hulk.
The Rock.
Fictional.
Predator.
Predator. Iron Man.
That's a good one.
I don't know.
If you died and went to heaven and could ask God to answer one conspiracy theory, what would it be? I'll go 9/11.
Yeah, I would say 9/11 and JFK.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to, 9/11 easily.
JonBenet.
Oh,
ooh, good one. Yeah, that's a good one too.
John, that was from Cody Styron. By the way, John Hodges asked if the professor on Gilligan's Island can make a radio from a coconut, why can't he fix a hole in a boat? I have a theory on this.
Oh, okay.
Who do you think made the hole in the boat?
What?
To strand them on an island. I think we could make this into a horror film where the professor kills off everybody one at a time.
With a coconut.
Remake of Gilligan's Island by Blumhouse. Update. The skipper.
So, and we find out the plane on Lost, the professor.
What the fuck?
Holy shit.
Larry doesn't like horror, yet he invents the greatest horror movie we've never seen.
You don't have to be gory with it.
It's true.
But it'd be downright scary.
It would be.
And what was it? Sane Elsewhere that was in the 80s that ended and everyone was just in a snow globe?
The Professor.
The Professor.
But that's just my theory as to why he couldn't. He made the hole in the boat. Mm-hmm. That's why he didn't fix it.
I think that answers that. I don't think you're going to get anything better than that.
I mean, honestly, my theory would have to be that he was stuck on an island with Ginger, like half naked because it was hot. I wouldn't want to leave either.
I was thinking like maybe he didn't have any adhesive to seal.
He made a fucking radio
out of a coconut.
But do you need
which you need soldering tools. You need some sort of
wires.
I don't know.
Transistors.
Okay, so he's on an island with a babe and has a more likely possibility of boning her.
Quick round the horn. Marianne or Ginger?
Ginger.
Marianne.
Marianne.
Yeah, it was Marianne too. I had the hots for the professor though. He was sexy.
Okay.
L. Pete.
The Pete.
Another one from him. Would you guys consider doing a Patreon show where you discuss in depth how you guys met, how you got into podcasting, develop the shows, sort of a self-interview? Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be fun to do, like maybe a one-off, or maybe like a, we could figure something out.
Another show can be
For sure.
Another show is another show, and that's what we've turned it into.
It can be whatever it wants to be.
It can be whatever.
But if you want to listen to that special episode, you need to be a patron on our Patreon.
And where would you find that?
On patreon.com/BeerCityPodcasts.
Beer City Media Podcasts.
What did I think? Okay. And then you'd have to just pay the five didgeridoos and you can listen to that.
Another show's the $3
level. Yeah. Gotcha. See, there you go.
L. Pete, again, you guys have gone through and shared a lot of rough personal moments with us while doing the podcast. Do you find the episodes harder to do while you're going through personal issues? Or is the podcast truly therapy for y'all?
This is probably one of the deepest questions we've been asked.
I don't think it's therapy. I mean, true therapy, you're talking to a professional. I don't think you can get that from this show.
Mm-hmm. I disagree. Personally. Because,
well, I mean, I'm just scientifically saying.
No, and then on that basis, yes, you're correct. But
is it a timeout from whatever my brain's going through? Absolutely. It just pauses it. But then when you unpause the tape, you're back to your problems.
We not only do this show for, you know, 2 hours every week. But we message each other frequently. Yes, we did a live stream, but we also talk and hang out. We're friends and family. And in that aspect, being able to come together and laugh. I mean, there have been some solemn moments on this show where in the Patreon episodes where we've brought up stuff that I've seen all of us get misty-eyed talking about. And this, you know, most recently has definitely been a hard time for Red Dead 2019. But I'm pushing through, and I will say that it has been semi-therapeutic for me to be here. So in that way, helping me get through.
It doesn't quite scratch the therapy. Like, I feel like having gone through therapy, I don't want to go back again. It doesn't quite scratch that itch.
No, because I can't just sit here and be like, these are my problems. Blah, 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 blah.
Then, yeah, here's your coping. What you're missing is here's your coping mechanism.
Right. Of course.
This is how you deal with that. That's
but
what
laughter,
it's missing.
Laughter is
it pauses the, it eases the pain. It pauses it for an hour or two.
Now, realistically, now, Ryan, you're just mentioning conspiracy, but like I would say all in all, every week we spend about a solid 8 hours with each other.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I say it's therapeutic and maybe not, and you're right, it's not the I'm sitting down and talking to a professional way, but for us, it's the sometimes you can take the petty stuff that is bothering you. And by doing these shows, if you go into it in a decent enough mood, you forget about it because it's so insignificant. So
you get it what you get out of it. Mm-hmm. I can't dictate what anybody's right. getting out of this.
I think personally for me, just because I'm a stay-at-home parent, just having like adult conversation is therapeutic personally for me. And even if I go into it, you know, not necessarily a feeling a 100% mentally, it's that like fake it till you make it kind of situation where you put on a brave face and you do it and you get through it. And then I always feel better at the end. Cause I'm like, you know what? We're doing okay. We're, you know, I feel happier than I did when we started.
Any day above ground is good.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Ah, Matt McShitterman.
Oi, McShitterman.
Hey.
Favorite Halloween moment? Like a party or a costume?
Oh.
I was able to spend a Halloween in Salem, Massachusetts. It was amazing. Cool. My favorite costume I did was Edna Turnblad from Hairspray.
Nice.
That's
awesome. The divine version.
Yes, of course.
Bummer that he goes with actual Halloween. I was going to be like, Halloween 2 when he stabs the nurse with the needle in the eye.
Ooh, that's a gruesome kill.
I like, I hate and like, love and hate the haunted house stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to do it. My wife makes me, she likes to do those things. Mm-hmm. So I do it with her. Right. So I like, I get so, like, you're right at that, going about to go on that first thing. And like this anxiety just builds up in me. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And then I do it and I'm glad I do it.
Yeah.
It's good spook times.
Because at the end, donuts.
Yeah.
And cider.
Yeah. I've always enjoyed Halloween because I love horror movies and they just sort of go hand in hand. But not until semi-recently did I really start to enjoy it because I have kids.
Yeah.
And that's a whole another brand of like re-experiencing things. And like taking your kids trick-or-treating is kind of a pain in the ass, but like at the same time you see how happy they are. We did 3 years ago, we did a pumpkin walk. We actually did that with Ryan and his family, where it's like it's after dark and this church carves and lights up like 600 pumpkins, and you go through the woods and look at all the pumpkins.
Fun.
Stuff like that like I wouldn't have done as a single person have sort of made me reevaluate how I enjoy holidays.
I think if I had kids, I'd probably give a shit about Halloween.
Yeah.
I love Halloween. It's my favorite time of year, which makes it like even more like being grumpy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's easier because I've decided this year to do Sober October, which is part of the kind of what the Joe Rogan podcast guys started a few years ago. And I think it's a great idea because as I'm getting older, I think it's better to make smarter decisions and try to be more conscious of what you're doing to yourself. So I'm not to get on that kind of a tangent, but I just want to say, yeah, I love Halloween. I always will. I love watching spooky movies, not spook. That sounds bad. I think, I don't know. I like
spook movies,
spookies. That's what I meant to say.
I like my favorite thing about this time of year is I love it because it gets cold, and because of that, we get our blankets out, and I really like when April and I are able to wrap ourselves up in a nice warm blanket and watch a
big old Josh burrito.
Yes, that's the best kind. Extra sour cream tonight, baby. And we watch like Halloween flicks.
So this is like your guys is all your favorite. This is your favorite holiday?
I like it because of the weather.
It's not my personal favorite. What's holiday? Yours? My favorite holiday is Christmas.
Christmas rules. I mean,
you've seen my house at Christmas. It looks like Santa threw up in here. Halloween is a close second,
like,
though.
I don't have kids. I'm surprised you don't like.
I don't like Christmas. Holidays at all.
He had rough holidays as a child.
Okay, so you can redo them.
I'm trying to spark the magic of Christmas in my husband with a candy cane up his ass.
Oh, by the way, for Christmas, I don't know if I'll put this in here.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna play candy cane roulette.
What is that?
Sounds sexy.
I have found candy canes that taste like
no
fun stuff.
No,
and I found clam flavored candy canes. pickle juice flavored candy canes.
There's got to be some New England guys that love those.
Oh, fuck yeah, bro.
So we're going to play some candy cane roulette this Christmas.
My ex would like the pickle bro.
Pickle juice. Rotisserie chicken was another one.
I found. I would like that.
God almighty. Okay, I'm down.
Chicken with a pickle, like mix them together.
You can mix them together.
Oh, yeah.
Don't know what
you're
doing.
Are we doing Secret Santa again this year?
Yeah.
I feel like it's tradition now. We've done it 3 years in a row. It's officially tradition.
Season 3 coming to close. You guys should be listening to the backlogs.
So that was it. Well, this might be one of our longest shows yet.
Possibly
2 hours,
two and a half right now.
Woof.
2:30, yeah.
But it's only 10:30.
Yeah. Good thing we started at 7:45.
Shit.
I'm glad I mentioned that because I think Larry caught it and was like, oh, fuck me sideways. I better make sure we get there because, you know, late Ryan's going to fuck it all up.
Nope. Right. Late Ryan was nowhere to be seen.
Nope.
Mm-mm. He's drinking two hearteds in a gutter somewhere. Mm.
Ryan's alter ego, Brian.
Brian. Farrig.
Such an effeminate name. Song.
Brian Farrig.
Brian Farrig.
You know, works at a
Starbucks.
No, it's against. Well, he could be. I was going to say a floral shop.
That's
he works.
I think I would like working shop, actually. It smells so good.
Brian Farrig would be like my bad doppelganger.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. He's just the opposite of you.
Yeah.
You're the bad one, remember? I think
you're the bad one already.
Oh, shit. That's
no,
right.
Shows up not late. Anymore.
All right. Well, anyways, that's been your episode, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Mm-hmm.
I want to quickly mention something. If you guys made it to this point and you've been listening for a while, we really appreciate a 5-star iTunes review. It's been a little while. We're up in the hundreds now with reviews, but it'd be nice to take some of those grumpy Gusses who don't like funny shows and up the ante of positive reviews. So if you could help us out on iTunes, it'd be much appreciated. Yeah. And if you can't,
we get negative reviews for being a comedy show, even though they went into the comedy section to find the show.
Right.
And that's not fair.
Like, I get the fact
too many farts. They're going to really fucking hate this episode.
Well, yeah, we treaded new ground, actually, today.
I sharted
new ground. We treaded new brown.
All right, well.
Oh, my goodness.
I guess at this point I have to ask that time-honored every episode question. Does anybody have anything they want to throw out there before we end this bad bear?
One hand under his head, he slowly begins stroking his penis. He takes the cold beer bottle and places it sideways under his balls, letting the cool condensation seep into his sack. Still in his stupor, Brock let the unicorn to pleasure him with its mouth. His eyes rolled up into the sky, feeling the gentle sensation of the beast's soft lips rubbing against the skin of his cock, its saliva coating his shaft. Celestia positions her rear end over him. She lifts her tail and squats with her hind legs. Her body shakes, and slowly from her asshole, a drip of creamy white liquid begins to stream out. It lands in Barack's mouth, and instantly he begins to savor the warm, chocolatey taste.
I guess we've come full circle. We kind of started with that, and now we'll end with
this. This is the legacy I'm leaving for my children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We love you and Josh.
Super.
We love you, kids. Thanks for listening to the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast. Have a great one, guys.
Flag. So a call, lockdown, fall in the business that got us sold. See through the news and the future.
This has been a presentation of Beer City Media.